So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review
me. Right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
There's two types of people in this world. People coming after Chris Hero and Chris Hero. Yo, I ain't gonna shake your hand today. You probably don't even know what it is. You probably don't even know you just had a match. You got snot bubbles like Hacksaw Jim Duggan at WrestleMania 5. But it seems to be the popular thing for people to come out here and get on this thing and try to make a name for themselves using the name Chris Hero when it comes out of their mouth. You don't say my name until you earn privilege to say my name, Vic Busek. Yo, I've earned the right to say your name because I'm king shit and you're the flavor of the week.
Oh, no. Can you say king?
So what I'm saying, you look like you're ready to go. Shit, Chris Hero is always ready to go. You want to do this like men and fight it out, or like punks and punk it out? I addressed you earlier. You can leave.
Chris is awesome. He's as hot as it get. The type to drop you quick with a mafia kick. Got the hunger of a young lion, plus the eye of the tiger. Pummel you like he's a young.
I feel Damien's gonna be looking
can I,
this way.
Can I pull like this? Is that okay? Or is that
yeah?
Cost,
it's just if you're looking away, it's gonna be awkward because
you don't have to look. I can listen.
I can do this. No, well, I got it. I can do this.
You don't have to make eye contact. No, this
is well, not. That feels weird. It feels. Kind no. of dirty at that point.
No, I'm not gonna.
Well, could I? It's fine to shift, but just if you're talking at length, just don't be like totally talking away from the mic. No, don't do that.
Can you just put the headphones on, John? And just
you know,
make
I'm
sure
used to doing this, John, for hours. Right? Like this is my job, holding a mic. Like this is my like you know I put 10,000 hours in now into
yeah,
this.
Yeah, but when you do this, this is the best no, mic.
You're right.
That's gonna shake.
You're right.
No, just leave it there. Leave it there. I'll be able to hear.
You know, they call me the
1-2-1-2-1-2.
1-2-1-2. Just talk, Damien.
1-2-1-3. 1-2.
You're the lowest of all of us.
I know. I got some bass.
1-2-3-4. 1-2-3-4. 1-2-3-4.
1-2-3-4. What are my settings like versus Dan's?
Oh my God.
Oh, what was it? There was a. Shit. There was last. Fuck, I'm trying to remember if it was at TSN or not, but it was like... No, it was when he came in to do Review of Raw.
Yeah.
And Sarge had the levels, like, my level and your level.
Yeah.
And Dan was...
Wow!
He went on, and it was... And Sarge had it at where you are usually at.
Oh, my God, I told Sarge,
I'm like, he is not at Way's level any. He's, like, three times.
We're, like,
yeah.
Polar opposites. I wish I had his... Half his gift.
Not one guest, though, this year said they couldn't hear you. Last year...
Oh. I couldn't hear you. There was parts... Actually, that's true. When I listened back...
Oh, yeah?
There are parts... There's actually one part... I can't remember where it is, where you're trying to interrupt. You're like, what's that? What's that? And I keep... And I just power talk over...
Really?
The Force Yoda. You're asking me, what's that? What's that? When I'm talking about the Force Yoda. And
It's the phone. Like, Sage, actually... I had a big problem.
Really? Okay.
Omega.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Last year, it was a combination. Like, he does talk lower, but also we had, like, a mic.
It's weird. It's like, this mic, too, when we do phoners, it's just naturally lower than these two. And it was a constant problem. Like, I made, like, a collage of, like, the clips at the end of last year's show where it was, like...
Really?
Four different...
Yeah, I remember that.
If you let, like, Helwani said he couldn't hear you, Jim Ross said he couldn't hear you, and there were, like, two others, and it was just...
It makes me feel shitty. It makes me feel like half a
person. Well, that was last
year's
Christmas show.
So if you want me to explain the Force Yoda, I'm prepared to.
Okay. Did you actually buy it?
Yeah, we got it for Hanukkah.
Nice. Nice.
From Warren's aunt and uncle.
Actually, I don't really care.
Okay. Well, fuck you.
No, the... What I do care about is the BB-8. Did you get that?
No.
Have
no.
you seen that?
Yeah.
The BB-8 toy?
The one that you can control with your iPhone.
The Sparrow?
You can control with your iPhone?
Yeah, control with your iPhone. Like, it doesn't even come with the controller, I don't think.
No, like, how do you control it? What do you do?
Download an app.
And then just, like, it's like a remote control type deal?
I have that for a helicopter.
Wow.
My wife's best friend, her husband gave it to me for the kids.
Nice.
Kids are not allowed to play with it yet.
I am. Like a drone.
Yeah, it's nope. Like kind of like a drone.
The BB-8, though, is it's a remote control ball, essentially, yeah. And with like a little top on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel it would quickly lose its charm.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
that stuff.
Like, that's a day.
Oh, yeah.
And, all that okay, stuff. What else does it do?
Yeah, that's true. It. When you're a kid, though, like, almost all toys are like that.
That being said, even though you, like, totally were like, oh, yeah, whatever, from a real, okay, legit Lego fan's perspective, oh, Lego yeah. Dimensions is awesome.
Nice.
It is so much fun.
Tell me about that.
It's like you put Lego things on the screen, and yeah. then you build stuff in the game. You have to rebuild your kit based on instructions that appear on the screen.
Yeah.
Is it all digital, or are there any real pieces?
There's real
Lego?
Pieces, yeah. And then there's like an interface where you actually put the real pieces. Like you actually
yeah.
theoretically have to rebuild the model.
There's like a thing, like it's like a sort of
not theoretically, I guess.
There's like almost like a new genre of video gaming now where you have to buy physical toys and digitize the toys, you know? It's
has a sensor on the bottom.
It's kind of foreign to you and I. But yeah, essentially it's just another way to market,
yeah.
you know, toys and video games together, especially like, you know, due to piracy.
I think it's like in my time, and maybe it's before your guys' time, you remember like sometimes a toy would come with a tape? And you'd be like, oh, cool, like tape. A tape.
What kind of tape?
Like a cassette, like an audio cassette. And it would be like a like their voice on it, like yes, I'm the like evil snake. I can't remember the toy line.
I've never had that.
My brother and I, when we got into like punk, would make each other mixtapes.
No
and we
way.
Would put snippets of these audio oh, wow, tapes great. In between the songs.
That's awesome. Sometimes though, I wonder. Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't think kids really make mixtapes anymore, but they probably do make like mixes.
Oh yeah,
you know how they throw absolutely. Up onto YouTube, and I just like. I just go on YouTube these days and I watch like video, like camera work tutorials, video production tutorials, and they're all done by like these 8-year olds and 9-year olds, and like their quality is just so high.
That's how yeah. I got that you know? When I was figuring out the noise reduction stuff. I left my notes you gave me here at work.
Yeah. And oh, just, so you went online?
I wanted to see if I could do it in Vegas, but even yeah. on the Vegas tutorial, it's like Audacity yeah. you have to get. So.
Audacity's good.
I gotta get Audacity.
That has changed
it's,
the way.
That's what this is. It's free.
I look forward now to getting hiss and shit.
Just so you can
like,
clean
it's changed
it up.
My life.
Do you use Audacity?
No.
Here we do.
Here, yeah. like, that's what we record on, but I never edit on Audacity.
And for the denoiser, like, just to get rid of that, the hum, it's yeah. good for that.
Like, you, yours use, was actually okay, but, like, our phone, there was, like, so much hiss on some of them that...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's just... it's so easy to eliminate.
Oh, that mainly on so phones easy. You have to worry about that hiss?
Yeah, you don't really get it.
Sometimes in these scenarios, like, if there's, like, a bad line, like, if you cross, like, a power line with yeah, a yeah, yeah. cable...
These always sound clean, though, for...
I guess, like, an air conditioner is the worst-case scenario. Way yeah. save my butt on my podcast.
Oh, yeah, an air conditioner
on his neurosis interview.
Yeah, my neurosis interview with Scott Kelly. Very apropos that we're talking about this before we talk about Evolve, because Gabe Sapolsky is a massive Neurosis fan, and cool. Scott Kelly is a massive Evolve fan.
Wow.
Yeah. Scott Kelly, who is totally down to come on a podcast one time, he listens to the show, and that's actually where he and I made the connection. You guys were the bridge between me and one of the greatest punk hardcore musicians of all time, metal, extreme music musicians.
Well, he's always welcome.
Well, he, yeah. I'm sure he's listening to this right now. That's why I got to be very careful what I say. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, so.
Well, based on the 7-minute introduction.
I knew that was going to be it. That's why I definitely.
It's Review Away with John Pollock, Wei Ting, and Damian Abraham.
Yes.
Who has reluctantly returned.
Not reluctantly.
He knocked on the door. He said, "You've got 90 minutes. The clock starts ticking now."
I was 20 minutes late, I have to admit.
So 70 minutes we've got with you.
Yeah, exactly. No, I can talk forever, guys. I got time. No, I definitely have to go over to my mother-in-law's house and help her set up a TV today. But apart from that, I got time.
You are just a big guy now in the podcast world, not only with your own show, but recently dropping Talk is Jericho.
Yes.
Hosted by Damian Abraham. Oh.
Like a cheese or a wine, it needed to be aged and mellowed, and now it is released.
Did you get to hang out with Chris? What's he up to these days?
Well, we texted back and forth just before the episode dropped. He's like, "Do you have any photos?" And I got it basically on the day before Christmas. Yeah, I guess it was pretty much the day before Christmas, and mm-hmm. it was like the last text message you expect to receive is Chris Jericho being like, hey, dude, I'm going to finally put up that podcast. Do you have any photos from that day? So who did I call? My friend Wei Ting.
Oh, wow. Were iPhones around when that podcast was recorded, or did you have to send him a Polaroid?
Yeah.
Listen to this guy taking shots. Listen, John.
Listen, I was there for that podcast.
I know you were. I think you gave me the ride
home. I did give you a ride home after that podcast.
Yes, you did. And so I really appreciated you ferrying me to and from.
Can you reveal when that podcast was recorded? Do you remember?
I don't even remember. I was trying to think about the date. I was talking to Lauren trying to place the date when we recorded that.
It was December. I don't know the date.
It was December.
It was December of 2014.
Okay.
Wow. I remember it was whatever the WWE pay-per-view was that month, because I had to drop you off and then get to the radio station afterwards, I believe.
That's right.
I believe that was...
I think that's true, yeah, because we did... No, I think it was something else. You had to do something else, like maybe watch a... Because wasn't a Saturday and not a Sunday?
It was a Sunday.
It was a Sunday, okay. Okay, but wow. Yeah, like I was waiting. I got bumped originally because Hulk Hogan came on.
Who?
Yeah, some guy. Some kind of racist dude. But he came on before, I guess, everyone realized that he was super racist, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's blown over? I'm surprised at how much people have just moved on from Hulk Hogan at this point. I don't sense the, like when you say this, Hulk Hogan, like people laugh at it.
Yeah.
They don't look at this guy as this... I don't think they view him as this hateful individual. I think they look at him as a stupid individual.
Well, because, like, now it's come out that, like, I think the worst thing is that call, or that one face-to-face conversation he had with his son when his son was in prison, and they did it in sort of Carney talk.
Yeah.
And it was, like, this insane...
That was pretty bad, too.
It wasn't the worst.
Well, that, you're right. It's not the worst. You're right. It's kind of like... What's worse?
Well, he was saying that, you know, the passenger, John Graziano, you know.
Actually, it's hard to say. Yeah.
But then, you know, he also had the racist one. Right? Yeah. You guys heard about the racist one, right? Where they had the... No, he had a racist one.
Oh, with Graziano? With Nick?
Yeah, where he came in this whole thing about... He was doing this whole thing, and it was all in, like, wrestler speak.
Yeah, like Snoop.
Yeah.
Talking like Snoop.
Yeah, yeah. But like, you know, like in kayfabe speak.
Oh, okay.
Right? Like, Carney speak.
Yeah.
About how... he would not want to be reincarnated as a quote-unquote Blazak guy because, you know, and it's just like this whole weird
thing. You're sure you're not mixing up any Carney terms with racial slurs?
No, I'm definitely trying to, like, put in the Carney. It's all – I'm trying to remember when the story came out, but it came out afterwards again. But it was one of these stories that was in the local newspaper at the time.
But no – like, it wasn't picked up on a national scale.
It was picked up on a national scale. But at this point, it was kind of like, oh, shit, he's racist.
Oh, this came out after the whole thing.
Well, it came out originally – but it was never picked up on a national scale back then. You're right.
Got
sorry.
It.
And then you also added that other... Have you ever heard that? I think it's DJ Who Kid.
No,
he was on DJ Who Kid.
Yeah.
You know, the hip-hop DJ.
Oh, right. Show. And that was where he... That was what everyone thought the big
That's
scandal
was
going
was.
To be when all the references were taken off the website before Gawker, or was it National Enquirer, Radar Online posted what the actual tape was that they had.
But, yeah, like, at first I thought it was that. The DJ Who Kid interview is, I remember hearing it, for some reason, I think we were on tour at the time, and we're in New York, and we're just listening to Sirius, you know, radio or whatever, satellite radio.
Shady. Isn't he on
Shady?
Shady.
It was on Shady 45. And then this Hulk Hogan interview comes on. He's on for, like, 45 minutes, and it's not maybe less than that. But, anyway, it is insane, the stuff he was saying. Wow. He is talking about how the game... How he talks to the game when he sees the game in a club.
Oh, God.
Using severe racial slurs throughout the whole thing. And you can hear DJ Who Kid being like...
What do you mean? He says the N-word?
Yeah.
Hogan says the N-word just on his interview?
Yeah, but just like kind of like in a way that would not in a quote-unquote...
Well, that was his defense later on was that growing up in Florida, I mean, that's how they would just address each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, no... I don't care what generation this was in Florida. I don't know if that was a perfectly acceptable a greeting for a white individual.
You know what would be an amazing, well, maybe terrible, but like if someone made a movie adaptation of Hulk Hogan's life, like went through every interview he's ever given and all these crazy outlandish tales, like, you know, being offered to be the bass player of Metallica, you know,
it would be a great cartoon.
It'd be an incredible cartoon. Yeah. Like, you know, just like
meeting a child, that was about to die before SummerSlam 1992 and writing a song about him when Hulk Hogan was never a part of SummerSlam 1992 in England. And I remember bringing that up to him in an interview and just being like, so explain to us the timeline here because it's a little off. It's like, oh, you know, it was just, maybe I got the date wrong or something like that. I don't know. There's a certain charm that, I mean, you don't want a factual sit down with Hulk Hogan because it's not going to happen. So entertain us, Hulk. Tell us about the time that Bill Clinton called you up about foreign policy options and you were the one that decided to go with the nukes. I mean, just make it extraordinary.
This is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. We've got an idea here, gentlemen.
And he'd have, like, a head full of hair in his, like, rendition.
Yeah, I mean, like, a huge... His hair should just get bigger every episode.
Yeah.
Well, it's the natural wrestler inclination that anything you present them with, they've got to come back with something bigger. It was, you know, Hulk, I understand that you actually played a bit of baseball down in Tampa while you were a musician. Brother, I was drafted by the Dodgers. It's like, okay, I got to one-up you. Like, that's just the mentality that a lot of these guys have. It's like, you could compliment them. And Damien, I heard you had 10,000 downloads last week. Brother, which is bullshit, 100,000.
Yeah.
You know? It's just, everything's got to be bigger.
Yeah.
Because all they deal with are numbers.
Yeah.
So there's no fucking ceiling to where this can go. It's just... ridiculous story after ridiculous story, none of it rooted in any kind of logic or fact, and forget that these exist where any of this can be back-checked. It's just you enjoy it for what it is. And that's how you get through a Hulk Hogan interview.
Brother, it was actually more like 70,000 downloads.
Brother, I won the World Series. It was the year they didn't have television.
My favorite thing he's ever said in an interview is that he loves the Stone Roses. Because... I doubt it's true.
Why would he bring that up?
In an interview one time with the enemy.
Somebody asked him?
He's like, hey, I hear the Stone Roses are back together. And the interviewer's like, yeah, they are. He's like, oh, I love that record. Like, Second Coming, I'd work out to that record or something. And it's just like.
Maybe like Brutus Beefcake's a big fan. Introduced
like,
it
someone's
to
like, I don't know. Name drop this to the enemy.
Well, I imagine he'd have a hard time talking himself out of what he's got going on right now.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think this cartoon is definitely a few
years
away.
I think it's a great idea. You know, like, they do Mike Tyson Adventures.
That's
this
true.
Should just be
took
like
a couple
that.
Years before we got to that point of allowing a Mike Tyson Adventures. I don't think you would have seen that in the late
90s. He comes to a crossroads where the continuation of Hulk Hogan is, I stay quiet or I own this. And I just go and I make a mockery of myself beyond the mockery that has already been created of me. I mean, this guy is a joke.
I could definitely see a reality show of him going, like, living in the projects or something. Like, all of a sudden, Hulk Hogan has to move to, like, a black neighborhood.
I think we're, like, almost, like, a cultural step beyond that now. Like, I don't know, I don't watch those Real Housewife type TV shows. Maybe they're more like that, but... I don't know, I kind of can't see, you know, that happening now, but maybe I'm giving humanity too much credit.
I mean, this is a guy that, as apologetic as he has been, I mean, he still showed his cards awfully. I mean, through his just, you know, retweeting that one tweet about Barack Obama uses the N-word on Mark Maron's podcast and he's the president. Oh. Hulk Hogan uses it and he gets fired. Yeah. There's an apples-to-apples comparison.
Yeah.
Retweeting every fan photo of where he's with, like, black fans and just, like, retweeting them, like, hey, look, I know black people. I mean, just, like, the god-awful worst public relations reaction to this, Hulk Hogan, which will be in textbooks within the next 10 years for PR classes.
Yeah, like, I just...
Look at this fucking idiot.
Yeah, he's just... I don't know. But Jericho was awesome. That was a fun time. And I got to eat oysters. I guess we can talk about now that how crazy that was.
Let's go back, because for a year I've been waiting to ask you about how this went up.
I think I was on since this, but we couldn't talk about it because it hadn't aired, right?
It was funny, because we were at, what was the place called, the comic book? Heroes?
Heroes. Woodbridge Heroes.
Very cool. I don't even want to say comic book place. I mean, it's just, if you're just a collector of anything. It's, or fan of animals, they're there.
If you like zoos, like, if you're a zoo enthusiast.
Like a zoo and comic book emporium. This is what it was. And especially, like, the wrestling memorabilia they had under this roof was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
They had this, like, Hulk Hogan workout kit, I think, from 1985.
They had every LJN action figure, like, bunch on, you know, mint on card.
Oh, and the plastic ones. They had to have had 300 of these things on sale. Just tons of stuff.
Everything.
So.
Everything. Everything was a little out of my price range, but it was awesome. Like, everything
was
incredible.
It's a great museum. Great place to just walk through.
The guests are insane.
Yeah.
It's like a Comic-Con throughout the year.
Oh, dude, they've had, like, Chuck Liddell. Like, we've been there numerous times for MMA interviews. There's one time where they had everybody there at one time, and it was, like, I feel like it was, like, Rashad, it was Chuck, it was Ken Shamrock, it was just a number of big names.
They were going to have, like, a Sopranos reunion or something up there, too, right?
At a comic book store.
At a comic book store.
Wow, it's kind of hard to do now.
No, but it wasn't, like, obviously everyone, but they had, like, someone... Oh, no, maybe, like, Sons of Anarchy, they were having a bunch of people.
Yeah,
there was,
something
crazy where they were, like, yeah, we're going to have the entire cast here. And then they were going to have the recreation. What were they trying to do? They were trying to have... Once again, this is pre-everything about Hulk Hogan coming out, but they're going to try and have Hulk Hogan...
WrestleMania 1.
That's right.
Yeah.
They were talking about that when we were there.
Yeah.
They wanted to get Hulk Hogan, Mr. T. Did they want,
Did they want
the main event guys?
Yeah, they want the main event guys. So I guess it can't happen now, obviously, but, like, still the fact
Snuka probably can't get into Canada.
Yeah, I guess a lot of things have changed since then. What a difference a year makes, you know? That interview's still remarkably fresh, though.
Did you re-listen to it? Because you probably forgot the entire
show.
Yeah,
like, I totally
That's the genius of Jericho, is that even you would re-listen to a show you've hosted because it's been that length of time.
That's true.
Smart. This is coming out Christmas Day, by the way, next year.
The genius of Jericho is also... doing an interview and having it set up so they bring you oysters. At the end of the interview, they brought over trays of oysters for us. And, like, every drink imaginable.
They probably made them in the back.
Yeah, they probably made them in the back.
It's part of the zoo.
What do comic fans eat? Oysters.
there were, like, yeah, what animals were there? Lemurs? Anacondas?
They're lemurs.
Alligators?
Alligators are what I remember.
There were lemurs in that little back.
Like, just alligators behind glass. Like, slightly
it was actually right,
concerning.
Right next to the LJN figures.
Yeah, and right beside the He-Man.
Oh.
They had a Castle Grayskull.
Wow.
Right down in... It was incredible. I should just bring my kids there and be like, here's your vacation. Go look around.
Yeah, something tells me they don't sell enough comic books to justify...
Well, they got to feed all these animals.
Yeah.
Like, you got to feed a pet alligator?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd really love to know, you know... What their biggest movers are?
Did Jericho have any words of advice for you ahead of the interview?
No, he was like, he is awesome. Every time I see him, I'm just like, wow, this is like, he's so like, hey man, how's it going? Like, just like totally different than I'd expect him to be, you know. And he was just, yeah, let's just go talk. And I'm like, okay. And we're talking about CM Punk, and that was. Right after.
If I'm not mistaken, either the day after or the week after they had announced Punk signing with the UFC. So that was the hot topic.
Yeah, and so he's like, yeah, ask me about Punk. And I'm like, oh, really? I'm like, I don't know if you want to talk about him because I know obviously, like, you know, kind of went back and forth between you guys. He's like, no, I don't care, man. Ask me about it. Ask me whatever you want. There's nothing don't ask me about. I'm like, okay.
He actually, about 2 months before that podcast, had contacted... someone in this room.
Well, I was going to say, I was going to have to thank you. That's why I keep bringing it back to Jericho.
Oh, I don't want to put the spotlight on me here.
No, I have to put the spotlight on you because I was told by Chris Jericho that the reason he thought of me is because he saw a photo I had posted of him and I on Instagram. And also, he had contacted John Pollock. And John Pollock had said... Damien Abraham would be a good person for you to have on the show.
Well, Chris Jericho needs life or podcast advice. I mean, I'm a wealth of knowledge.
So thank you, John. He also then followed up by saying, well, you're not really big enough to be a guest, per se.
Oh,
so why don't you interview me for the show?
So, Damien, just as big as you get and invites you get, just remember who features you as a guest.
But like that being,
on their shows.
Yeah, exactly.
You get top billing.
No, thank you. And but you know what? That is just the way I would want it, because I could not imagine Jericho trying to fill an hour of things that he finds fascinating about me, whereas I can easily fill an hour of asking him things I find fascinating.
You guys had very good chemistry together, just very much felt natural.
Yeah.
It was never an awkward conversation. You guys just went back and forth, and you know this guy's career. You know more than just simply, oh, it's the WWE guy.
I think he respects music and musicians so much. And like one of the things I respect most about him is the fact that he's someone that you put in any situation and he will find a way to excel at it. And that's music for him. Like, he is eating shit, you know, like the way, sorry, I'm swearing a lot on today's episode. I apologize.
Won't be able to air this.
We'll censor it all.
We're going to have the little red explicit E beside it.
That's fine, because the way you probably look at him in wrestling, I mean, to a degree, like, your band has done a ton, and I'm sure he looks at that kind of very, very much in a similar way. I mean,
well, I think he's not necessarily as big a punk fan as I'm a wrestling fan or anything, or like whatever type of music we are at this point, hipster hardcore or whatever. But at the same time, I think I appreciate that. But yeah, like, I think he knows what you have to do.
That's the conversation I want you guys to have, because I know you weren't as sold on Fozzy, and he probably wasn't as sold in the punk world.
Well,
perhaps.
That's the thing. He told me that he and he said that he used to have these incredible conversations with like all these famous punk wrestlers over the years about like, you know, all the things that you have to do in to be a metal fan versus being a punk fan, and how much harder it is to be a metal fan versus being a punk fan and stuff like that. So I think he respects punk rock, but he, like, you know, lovingly likes to poke at it too.
What do you think is the biggest negative of Fucked Up?
Yelling vocals.
Oh boy.
I'm only kidding.
No, it's definitely yelling vocals.
Where do I start?
Well, look at you now. You're changed, Way. You're no longer Radiohead Way or Death from Above 1979 Way.
What am I?
You're now Jiu-Jitsu Way.
Oh.
You're just like, all you're thinking about is ways to take
no,
us down.
No, not at all.
You're like, you're assessing us.
No, I feel like I've even cooled off on Jiu-Jitsu over the past year, probably.
Your sweatshirt is telling us a different story.
Well, I do need clothes.
It's the one Christmas gift that I hit the jackpot on.
That's true.
I do need clothes.
I have seen some stripes on a belt recently.
Yes,
too.
Yes.
Congratulations. Yes.
Thank you very much. I hear that somebody else in this room might be thinking about stepping onto the mats.
Well, Way, thank you very much. And yes, on the same level as your accomplishment of actually achieving something in this sport, I am said thinking about taking part in this sport.
There we
go. Our gym open, Matt, they're launching an MMA program.
Really?
MMA 101.
I want to do a catch wrestling thing. I want to learn how to.
Yeah,
do
I don't
that.
Know whether. It,
I they, mean, catch wrestling and jiu-jitsu are not all that different.
That's what I hear.
I mean, it's just.
Someone told me it's like no gi is close to
yeah,
it, right?
Yeah. It's very much.
Though
similar.
I feel like if there's a place that would teach something like closely resembling catch, it might
like
be.
A lot of it, it's like term differences. I mean, in catch, it's a hammerlock.
Yeah.
In jiu-jitsu, it's a kimura. I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain fundamental principle differences, but I mean, there's a lot of bleed over.
I would actually be curious about taking a pro wrestling class. And I was going to say,
yeah.
Battle
Santino.
Arts. Yeah. Battle arts.
Mouth knows a guy.
Santino's.
Mouth went to a school.
Oh, that's right.
Are you at that story yet? No, you haven't listened, have you? To the
well,
show?
No.
Okay,
I'm halfway through.
Mouth to defend Damien, he's in the midst of listening to our Mammoth right. show from last week. There's a great Dan Lavransky story.
I'm about an hour and a half in.
But Battle Arts, they teach, like, I mean, obviously it's named after Battle Arts, the promotion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
well,
Japanese shoot style.
Right? Like, and what's his
Yuki,
name?
Ishikawa.
Yeah.
He's gone back to Japan, though.
Oh, he's back there.
Yes, he's back in Japan.
That was probably the highlight of the behind the scenes of the interview to me was when.
That's right. He was there with Santino that
day. Yeah. When we're in the middle of the interview, there's this, like, legit famous, you know, shoot kind of fighter guy wearing his awesome blue Ribera Steakhouse jacket. And
God, I didn't even notice the jacket.
Yeah, it was the sickest blue one. And the dude who owns the comic book shop, who looked kind of like the villain from Last Action Hero in a way, was trying to put
with
a
glass eye.
Yeah, or not maybe not the villain from that, but like definitely like a villain from a movie like that, Last Action Hero, is trying to put the parakeet on his shoulder. He's like, come on, man. Look. He's like, just like, kind of like.
We're making Woodbridge Hero sound like the most insane place.
It is the most insane place it I've is ever insane. Been to. I have been to a lot of places. I've been fortunate to go to a lot of places playing in the band. Nothing will top Woodbridge Heroes for insanity. For what I thought it was going to be versus what it was, holy, was it a different experience. Anyway, that's really putting it over.
We should get into this review.
How long are we into it?
We're only a half hour in at this point.
That's not that bad.
Do you think the show will be longer than the Christmas show?
It can't be. We'll have a review.
We know our limit now, at least. We know our
time. We play within it. Yeah. Damien, Evolve 38.
Yes.
The biggest question I got from people was why we're reviewing Evolve 38.
Yeah, I got that too.
Which, listen, this is not just some throwaway show. I mean, if you want to look at this, first cage match the promotion ever did, as well as the return of Davey Richards, who was, you know, originally Evolve was to be a vehicle for Gabe Sapolsky and Brian Danielson. And when Danielson ended up going to the WWE, it kind of shifted focus, and Davey Richards became a pretty main talent in Evolve.
Richards is a co-founder, isn't he?
Yeah, like he was very much involved in the startup of Evolve, and then him and Gabe kind of had their issues, and then this led to Davey returning here after Trent Beretta was taken off of these shows, and this was setting up their biggest weekend of the year, which is the WrestleMania show. So I didn't think this was a completely random show, but why Evolve 38?
Well, I think it was because I had a bunch of Evolve Blu-rays in my hand at the time, and I was just kind of flipping through the covers, and I was like, which ones haven't I watched yet? And I'm like, I haven't watched Evolve 38 yet. And also, I want to tell the story about meeting Roderick Strong in an airport this year. And I'm like, okay, there we go. Evolve 38.
That's about the criteria me and Way would use.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly. I was like, what would be more fitting? And I think I feel – luckily, there's – incredible stuff on this show, like wrestling wise, and I think, as you say, the first cage match and Davey Richards' return. So luckily, I can
spend a half hour talking about the cage setup.
Yeah, the cage is
holy
a little,
Christ! This is the biggest piece of shit cage I've ever seen.
They worked it into it a little bit, right? So that became part of the story at least. So, but yeah, it was a
now,
little.
Now, did you not buy this a second time if you had the Blu-ray?
No, I had the Blu-ray, but I was going to try and I wanted to give you guys the code.
Well, I bought it.
Oh, and I heard.
So I want everyone to know that here on Review Away, we purchased this event.
When I was setting up the interview with Gabe Sapolsky for the show, I was like, John bought the show, so he wanted me to say thank you very much for buying the show. He was going to give you a comp code to see it.
I don't need a comp code.
Look at this guy, baller over here.
That's it. That's the big podcast dollars at work.
And he'll give away the comp code in a prize pack if you sign up join our Christmas jingle contest next year.
You know, I buy PWG DVDs. I give them away. Some people think that's not good enough.
Actually, the winner, Rich, has
denied the PWG
DVDs.
He has
denied. He's just like, you know, not. Yeah. He. We have other things he's more interested in.
All he wants is your tape.
No, actually, he.
He doesn't want that?
I kind of prodded him, hey, you really
okay,
want this?
That's just a selfish move to turn down the SMC tape.
Yeah, that
he could have gotten
really,
that and shared it.
No, is a jerk move.
No, that's a great move.
He could have had a whole underground email set up on the message board where it's like, if you log in at this specific time for a 30-minute window, I'll post it.
No.
He could have leaked it like Al of the Hogan sex tape gradually over time.
Yeah.
Piece by piece.
Maybe there's some
match
disparaging remarks made by Way on this tape.
I'm not going to say. Oh. I don't even know.
If you wake up one morning and there's no references to Wei Ting at liveaudiowrestling.com,
we'll find some retweets of me with whoever.
The SMC days.
Yeah. I was just talking about the erotic parts of that tape before it came horribly racist to watch when we were all just watching it for titillation.
What are we talking
about?
The
Hogan
sex tape.
Okay, I thought you were talking about Wei's tape.
I don't know where you were going here.
Evolve 38. Sunday, March the 8th from Deer Park, New York.
Yes.
In front of a crowd of, what would you guess, 200?
200, I'd say, yeah.
I mean, this was...
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, very...
Dimly lit.
Yeah, why don't you, Wei, first of all, set the scene from a production standpoint. We haven't reviewed any Evolve. I mean, this is... I don't want to say bare bones, but
I would.
Kind of is.
I would say bare bones.
Listen, they did have graphics. I mean, they did have a screen.
That's bare bones.
They did have an entrance. I mean, these are more than some shows.
The thing is, though, I kind of look at these, you know, at a different scale than, you know, obviously a WWE or anything on a broadcast show. This is produced for DVDs primarily, and then also for WWN online for the people who choose to stream it. So I'm not looking for a big entrance stage or anything like that.
Yeah,
I know,
like,
people are working. Like, it's like you go to like an indie rock show, and
it'd be like going to a Taylor Swift show and being like, geez, when I go and see Fucked Up, it's not like seeing when I see Taylor Swift. You guys don't really have the same sort of costume changes. It's like, it kind of has to be a different...
Do you not feel that is somewhat shifting, that the more popular and more watched that NXT becomes, that there's a certain fan base that looks, that is what they want indie wrestling to look like, much like they look at Raw and say, that's what television wrestling should look like.
I think, once again, to bring it back to music, which is because that's the only place I feel safe to talk about things sometimes, it's Arcade Fire would be an example. Like, there's going to be stuff that's going to be, you know, the quote-unquote indie vibe. Maybe Arcade Fire's not a good example. Imagine Dragons. To me, that's a band that has totally appropriated indie image, but like has been kind of like a major label thing. Or The Killers, even. You know, there's always going to be that thing that kind of like takes that indie feel, but it is still stadium rock.
Right.
You know, and that's NXT. This is real indie wrestling.
Yeah. Like, I think there's a certain charm when you're going to,
absolutely,
you know, an independent rock show or something, or even an independent wrestling show where it would feel off to have like crazy pyro, you know. Instead, you want the low ceilings. You want, you know, sort of the shitty looking cage set up around the ring.
I do not want shitty microphones.
Again, it's the same philosophy when it comes to something like even podcasting, you know, versus like a big budget radio production.
You can't have hiss.
I think there's a level of overproduction that gets in the way of, you know, the content being what, you know, the best it could be. But when you're talking about, you know, bare minimum production, the least you have to ask for is clarity of delivery. And, there are certain issues on this show, which I'm sure, I mean, you've seen more evolved shows than probably John and I have. So you tell me if this was indicative of, you know, other evolved shows or, like, what a typical evolved production look like?
Like, the production's similar. Like, other shows are brighter lit, other shows are better attended, you know, and things like that, obviously.
About how much would you say? Like,
I think there's shows that you see that are like 600, 700 people, you know, and then I think they've even had shows up to 1,000 people, maybe. I'm mistaken on that, but, you know, but then you do see these shows that are lower attended, obviously, like this. And as far as the audio issues, yeah, like, that is unfortunately a reality of radio mics. You know, like,
yeah,
I've been a victim to that, being in,
as John pushes Damien's mic.
But I mean, radio mics especially, you know, like,
yes,
that's why you need cord mics.
Wireless mics, yeah.
Running cord is a nightmare, especially, you know, what it's like. Obviously, both of you know what it's like being a graduate.
Oh, man, watching the show, like, I've been through, you know, times.
This could have been our practicum project.
Like, even working at the Fight Network here, you know, where our mics, our wireless mics, wouldn't work. And I felt for, you know, whoever was trying to speak into the mic on these shows. But again, these are kind of like little charms about, like, low-budget productions like these that you kind of... You can kind of enjoy, because they're moments that kind of stand out. How does Drew Galloway react when his mic keeps cutting out in his big final promo where he has to sell all this stuff?
It's a different skill. Like, it's when you see, you know, unfortunately back to music, but when you see a band and they break a string or have to tune, if that front person's able to fill that time and you don't feel like, you know, like, or is that person able to compensate for the mic being terrible that night and people not being able to hear the vocals when the band's playing and stuff like that. Like, it's a different skill, you know, and that's like, you know, I think, and that's the thing, Drew Galloway, I think, is still learning it, you know, especially that final promo, you know. I'm like,
I thought he handled himself pretty well.
I thought Drew McIntyre, I think he was good, but yeah, like, it needs, you can tell it's like one of those things that he's still learning. Like, CM Punk would have just ditched the mic and yelled it, you know, cupped his hands and just yelled it, being like, I don't care, you're going to hear it how I'm going to say it.
The announcers were Rob Naylor and Trevin Adams. What did you think about the commentary team, Damian?
I thought the commentary team was good. I liked A.R. Fox's part, too, when he came. I liked the guest commentary thing. I thought it worked well. I don't like, and this is just a pet peeve, probably because I am too PC, but when people are always in making reference to things being PC now, the culture being too PC and things like that, I don't know, it gets on my nerves after a while. So
my pet peeve, and there was some of this...
I'm bag over, sorry if you're hearing that, by the way, to get my computer and my copy of the DVD out.
If there was a pet peeve I had on this show, it was... And this is something that I think any announcer outside of WWE just can't help themselves when they'll refer to it as a belt and then have to point out to everybody that they're calling it a belt. And this isn't a pretty blue cage. And it's like, the fuck WWE comments to me are just so tiring. And I just... It was like, let's just pretend that we have all bought your show to watch your event and just give us your stuff. And I don't need these goddamn subtle knocks at the ultra successful company. They're just very tiring to me.
Yeah, I think
it goes for Lucha Underground. Yeah. It goes for any promotions. I think just have confidence that people are here to watch you, and it doesn't have to be a knock against the guys above you. And it's just it's tired with the terms. That's my pet peeve.
But I think that's like what ways you're almost you have to condition. Because as much as WWE is wrestling to 99% of the people in this world, you still have to condition people that there is this other thing. And you get empowered by standing in opposition to something.
I just don't get the whole... People just, I think, because WWE coined something, it's awful. It's, oh my God, they won't call it a belt. They're going to call it a championship. If Ring of Honor had that same philosophy that we call our belts championships,
I don't know.
It was like, look how much prestige they put on their titles. WWE doesn't give a fuck about their belts.
I was reprimanded once by CM Punk on The Wedge for calling it a belt. So I love when people say...
I feel like if Ring of Honor was limiting their talents, promos, in the same way that I feel, you know, we hear that they do in the WWE, I feel like they would get a similar level of backlash.
I just feel that sometimes because it's a WWE edict that it's necessary, you don't give any thought to it, and it's just automatically bad. Like, I see, if there was this incredible talent on the indie scene who was just phenomenal wrestling, great mic worker, good-looking guy, bilingual, and then he got signed to the WWE, and they put this independent star under a mask and they labeled him El Generico. What? How disrespectful would that have been to the independent Sami Zayn if it was the other way around?
He picked that, right? Did he pick that? I don't know. Maybe I'm
Sami Zayn?
My ignorance. He picked El Generico. That was his,
yeah.
his guy. Yeah,
his invention.
His character, yeah.
No, I mean, but that's the thing. Like, if
but he, I'm just saying, like, that was... It was like this huge following he had on the independent scene, this El Generico. Yeah. If he had come into WWE and been given that, it would have been the ultimate slap in the face that you see nothing in this guy and you're labeling him El Generico. What an insulting name.
But I think he got over because his wrestling is so good that people were like, oh, we'll put up with this terrible gimmick. You know, and like the best angle.
Exactly. Like, I feel like even in ROH, I didn't think El Generico was like a crazy great gimmick.
No, the only time I fell in love with him was when, like, obviously he was an amazing wrestler. And
that's what got him over.
And then that when he went serious. Remember that one where he went, him and Steen and Colt Cabana, and they were in that big feud, and it was like awesome. And that was like, oh shit, he is an amazing wrestler, and he's not just this goofy.
Yeah.
Sorry, cutting you off. I feel like
No.
Any thoughts on the commentary way before we get into...
I was actually very impressed. I didn't catch their names, though.
Rob Naylor and Trevin Adams.
Yeah. Rob Naylor is the main play-by-play guy?
Rob Naylor is like an encyclopedia on professional wrestling. Yep. Worked in NXT on the creative end. I mean, super smart individual who just... I mean, very much on the level I would put of like an Excalibur when it comes to knowledge base. Yeah. And Trevin Adams, I had never heard this guy do commentary before. I thought, great voice and enjoyed it. I thought Rob Naylor, I'm sure that if you haven't heard a ton of him, there's times he can be too super fan on some of these shows. But I thought they complimented each other very well. And I mean, that's all you can ask for in a play-by-play guy, that the guy knows all of these talents and is super well-versed in professional wrestling.
Knows all the moves.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think it's also kind of neat that there's this era, this new kind of wave of people doing play-by-play and commentary where it's not, you don't have to be Joey Styles, you don't have to be that guy from XPW, you don't have to be that, you have your like weird voice signature thing where you're just too loud for your own good, or being too over the top, or too extreme.
Yeah, that was definitely an issue, I think, with the post-Joey Styles era of everyone trying to be the next Joey Styles, that it was just, it was a very hard fit.
Yeah, I love the commentary on Evolve stuff.
Show kicked off with Martin Stone and Biff Busick, and they went over Stone being trained by Dave Taylor and William Regal. There was a big slap by Busick in the corner. Stone then suplexed him, was working over the neck. There was a release German by Stone, and then a release, and then a lariat for the first pin attempt of the match. And they worked out of the sequence where Busick got out of a crossface, hit a half Nelson suplex, and then Stone was able to block him, hit a forearm to the face, and Busick was trying for the rear naked choke, finally got on his back and submitted him in 5 minutes and 17 seconds, with Naylor emphasizing how a match can end at any point. I thought this was a good way to start the show with just a quick match, especially considering, in hindsight, the lengthier matches you were going to get later on the show. I think matches where you have a quick finish, whether you put it middle of the card or even opening, I think that's always good to have on a show. And it gets the submission over immediately as a really dangerous finish.
And I love how when you watch a show on Evolve, it's like there's people that are kind of like laced throughout the card that feel like they're main event talent and in the picture right from the start. And the whole way through the show, like, yeah, it's a short match, but like it does matter.
It's not necessarily kind of that formulaic thing where you have the undercard guys strictly at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I see. Yeah, I agree with John. The thing I loved most about this opening match was the length. And, you know, it wasn't a match that I didn't need a ton of near falls or anything like that. I just kind of wanted a taste to see what each of these guys were capable of. And I certainly got that. I noticed it was from watching this that the crowd they certainly didn't sound that big. And I suppose going into it, I was expecting, you know, more of a, having seen, you know, a PWGs, having seen a Progress show recently, I was expecting kind of that level of energy in some of these shows. But on this particular edition of Evolve, it really wasn't that at all. Like, this crowd sounded very, whether it be the miking or maybe the fact that they weren't really seen, or maybe it just wasn't a huge crowd, you couldn't really feel that much energy from this audience.
Yeah, I think it picks up, though, at the end, like, for the main event and sort of, like, the, I guess, semi-main. But, yeah, you're right. Like, that's the one unfortunate drawback, and that's the one thing these other indies that are kind of in these super hot periods right now have this advantage, where they have these crowds that are kind of like the third man in these, or the fourth man, I guess, counting the referee in these.
It's also
matches.
A Sunday night crowd. I mean, all these fans probably by about 10:30, they're looking at their watch. They're like, the law's starting in a half hour. We got to be home in time.
But I mean, you've seen I guess some of it involves bigger shows. Do they ever get to that level? Right.
I don't know if that level, like Progress Wrestling is like a different, you know, beast almost. Like the crowd is, and NXT even now, like the crowd is so much part of the show and things like that. And I think that's
this was also a weekend where they did two shots in New York. So, I mean, you did have a crowd that, to me, it's like if I was going to be in that area, I'm probably going to the Saturday night show.
Saturday show.
Sunday night. I mean, that's a tough night, I think, to run anyway. And when you've already gotten, let's say, a 3-hour show the night prior, tough to replicate that the next night.
Yeah, I think that's the – and I see that in Toronto. Well, we see that. I see that in Toronto. Mm-hmm. We see those Ring of Honor shows too, where sometimes the second night doesn't feel – actually, lately, the energy's been up for the
Well, they'll
night.
Do the iPay-per-view Friday, and then they come back TV for the tapings.
Yeah, and, like, there's sometimes where you have a thinner crowd that second night and things like that. But and it's weird with wrestling where, you know, you see these places where it's like, why don't they just – I guess you have ceiling height requirements, but if you can find a way to pack – a smaller room with a lot of people, that energy, like Progress Wrestling, when they do some of those things in Underworld or some of those pubs, it's incredible because you know that's like a tiny room. There's not more than 300 people there.
And there's probably liquor. as well.
Liquor definitely helps. Liquor definitely helps.
At one point in the match, the announcers talk about Busick being number one in the Evolve rankings or the ratings. What are those?
They do have an Evolve top 10.
Yeah, what is that?
It's like it's an actual ratings. It's like wins and losses matter type.
Incident. So every throughout the course of the whole year, every match is counted towards the rankings.
Yeah, and I don't want to pretend like I'm the Evolve encyclopedia. I'm fairly new to the product as well, but at the same time, yeah, like they do have it. There's a ranking that changes and it does like matter, and then so the depending on where you are in the ranking, you can go for a title shot or
that was always when Evolve launched. I mean, they were very heavy on guys' records, where they had records, and they've kind of shifted away from that. And I mean, Evolve, I'll say I think that they're not afraid to experiment with new things and look at things constantly. That Gabe will see, okay, this is not working, let's throw this away and go a different way. And another thing that they would do later in 2015 was trying to kind of tighten up shows as well, making it, instead of, putting 8-9 matches on a card, let's do 6, for instance, and just kind of, tinkering with the presentation of independent wrestling. I mean, this is something that it's not something you're going to become a millionaire at, and I think it's tinkering with different things like that. But I think any time you can emphasize that, hey, this match has some importance rather than just a throwaway match, it's typically a good thing.
And do they use it to determine number one contenders or not really? Because
one of the titles they did, but then I think but as John said, they've kind of shifted away from it. But they do.
Right.
It does matter.
It's probably just like the UFC, where the rankings don't really mean anything.
The media should be able to vote on the rankings.
Yes, I'll be submitting my vote.
Like the NCAA too, right?
Yes.
Football?
Yes.
That's the extent of my sports knowledge. Though I did watch a lot of baseball too this year.
Oh yeah, everyone did.
Well, my kids though.
Will you be watching in April though?
My kids will make me watch in April. My kids are loyal.
The test will be come the end of May. How many are watching?
Yeah, opening day.
There'll always be interest at the beginning.
Opening
of the
day
season.
Will be packed. It depends how well they do going into May, I'm sure.
See, as much as I want Toronto to do really well, and because I want my kids to be happy with that, it's a lot better when you go to the all-you-can-eat section when it's empty.
Where? At the Sky?
Even all-you-can-eat day a couple times a year for sections when the Jays aren't doing that well.
What do you mean all-you-can-eat?
All-you-can-eat hot dogs, ice cream, and soda.
I've heard about this,
and
yes.
And peanuts. And
so the poor people working the stands that day, they just have to, like, constantly
They, like, mass-produce it. Like, there's, like, you walk in, there's, like, bins of hot dogs. Believe me, like, they are, they're overworked, obviously, but I think no more than they would be any other day. I think they kind of account for this. And
is it all-you-can-drink as well?
Soda.
Yeah.
Which is Damien's cool with.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with that. It's the one day I'll break. Actually, I broke for today, too. But that's because I've had no sleep the past few. Christmas time, if you're a parent. Whew.
Well, so, we appreciate you coming in.
Well, thank you.
Taking care of us. Your other kids.
Damien's children are just standing outside waiting.
They're just outside in the cold.
Playing with BB-8.
Hey, play with your toys. Play with that force power Yoda you wanted so badly. No. They're with my father-in-law.
We then got the introduction of the unfortunate star of the show, the microphone, as Biff Busick cut a promo on Chris Hero saying he's going to do the same to him in San Jose in a couple of weeks over WrestleMania weekend. It was cutting in and out, and then we got the graphic package without sound, highlighting the rest of the matches for the card. And that took us into a tag match with Team Tremendous, consisting of Dan Barry and Bill Carr. Did you see these guys at the House of Hardcore show? Were you at that show back in the summer? Because these two were on that card. I enjoy this tag team. Against Jody Christofferson and Earl Cooter, accompanied by manager Larry Dallas. And this was Team Tremendous's debut in Evolve. Bill Carr, very much a Ray Trailer lookalike.
Sorry, I just, these names are like, I don't know if like these are like pro wrestling names or more like stand-up comedian names.
Christofferson. Well, Dan Barry actually does do comedy, I believe.
Oh, he does?
Yes. So maybe it is way.
Yeah.
They're bridging the gap. Team Tremendous. I think it's supposed to be ironically funny.
Do you think like now being a stand-up comedian in wrestling is kind of like being a bouncer was in the 80s? Like this is like the other gig you have?
Your day job?
That's your
stand-up?
Yeah.
The stability.
That or a bouncer,
maybe it's not,
to be quite honest.
Stand-up comedian or podcast host, I'd say.
Yeah, Cole Cabana set the, he's like the template.
Like that's wrestling training now. It's like you sit down, you got to come up with your podcast name.
I Have a Podcast is the new I Have a Band.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Not a lot of wrestlers. Actually, I guess there's a lot of wrestlers that have bands at different times. You know Mean Gene Okerlund in the South Dakota Hall of Fame for music?
Oh, what? Really? I thought you were going to drop a punk note on Gene Okerlund.
No, no. He was in a punk band. Rockabilly. He was
really?
In rockabilly. I had no idea. Like, teen rockabilly band.
Wow.
And so like he had like a couple local like hits.
I mean, we know about Jimmy Hart, but...
Yeah, and Jimmy Hart, though, didn't... he doesn't sing on the Big Gentry's hit, though, right?
I don't know.
He's on, like, a bunch of their kind of more minor hits, but, like, the big one, he's not on.
And what does Mean Gene do?
He sings.
Wow.
There's, like, a photo of him.
No,
like,
he's got the voice for it. It doesn't surprise
Commodore
me.
Commodore.
Cool.
And stuff like that. And there's that other guy, oh, I wish I could remember his name now, but he was, like, a Portland wrestler, and Greg Sage from the band The Wipers, who are... totally the influence on Nirvana. When you hear The Wipers, you're like, oh, that's where Nirvana got their sound. And he played guitar in this wrestler. Oh, I can't remember his name now. But anyway, he had a psych rock band in the 70s. And the guy from The Wipers, when he was 14, played guitar in it.
Wow.
Or 15, sorry.
And cool. All that from Team Tremendous' name.
All that from Team Tremendous.
This is how these shows go. Jody Kristofferson,
like,
of course.
Out of punk now, unfortunately.
Why don't you tell us about Jody Kristofferson, Damien?
What do you mean?
I want the whole history here.
I don't have much.
Who's his father?
Oh, Chris Kristofferson?
Yes.
Is that really?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
Holy shit. I know. I've seen him wrestle. I had no idea.
His dad would go to NXT shows at times when he was under developmental.
What?
I can't believe you did not know that.
I did not know this. Maybe I did know this in the
week. Get the fuck out of here, man. You're done.
Wow, I'm done.
You're here for your music tie-ins.
I'm here.
And Jody Kristofferson here, a goddamn pro wrestler.
Well, I
thought he was mainly one of the reasons you chose this show.
No.
Man.
No, I chose this show.
Well, I'm glad you did now. I got schooled you on this whole thing called...
terrible Roderick Strong story I'm going to tell later on.
Jody had been teaming with Scott Dawson in NXT, and he got cut in the summer of 2013, so now on the independent circuit.
He's handsome, too. No wonder. That's where he gets his good looks.
You know, he's got that. He's very much got a... Scott Dawson was a natural pairing with him. They look very similar. You could pass them off as brothers.
Who's his mom?
His mom, I don't know.
Is it
Mrs.
Like
Kristofferson.
Or a famous person of some sort, or...?
You can look that up for us. I don't know the mother.
I know the father,
because the father was pretty famous.
I lean in to type it in. Like,
are we not worth a 3G lookup?
I don't have a 3G on my... Fuck, fine. Get my phone out. God damn it.
We're just joking around.
Wade could easily do this. Wade's looking at
on his brand new phone. His new Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Why'd you go Samsung instead of iPhone?
I'm trying out Wind for like 15 days.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they give you the phone as a loaner?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Cool. That's your burner.
This match featured Bill Carr was in. They were beating down on Earl Cooter. What a name. Earl Cooter. This is where the announcers brought up that there was an error on Roku, because this day, March the 8th, was daylight savings time, and Roku did not acknowledge the hour shift. So there were people on Roku that were only getting... the show starting now, and they informed them, well, you've only missed one match at this point. Yeah, this is match number two. So Roku, Evolve, and Daylight Savings Time, the triangle of death on March the 8th of this past year. Anyway, I was glad that this was mentioned on the broadcast.
I think, though, in the history of streaming disasters and indie wrestling,
yeah,
you know, that like you missed the first match. Hey, at least there's audio for the show, or at least you see the show.
It's like, that's it? I missed a five-minute submission finish? I'm good. Dan Barry leaps off the turnbuckle and hits a DDT to Jody. Cooter then stops Barry from tagging out, somersaults under a clothesline, tags in Bill Carr for the big hot tag. He does some of the boss man spots, including the side slam. Jody makes a save. Then they went into these big high-flying spots. We saw a tilt-a-whirl head scissors by Bill Carr, who's a legitimately 300-plus pound man, so doing this is rather spectacular. Barry then hit a corkscrew tornado dive to both men on the floor, followed by Bill Carr with a somersault plancha. There was a reverse razor's edge by Carr to Cooter into a downward spiral by Barry. Then a rack bomb delivered to Barry. He kicks out. Barry then ducks. Jody clotheslines his partner Cooter, and Carr super kicks Jody. Barry hits a sliced bread off the shoulders of Bill Carr to Cooter and pins him at 10:23. And Carr just tears off his dress shirt with his tie remaining. And this man looked so happy to have won. And the heels were just pissed as they sauntered to the back.
Doing the Lethal Weapon Total Lethal Weapon vibe.
Oh, there you go. Thank you for that reference.
That was what they were doing.
I guess so.
The tag and the...
No.
We got it. That was tremendous.
All right.
I thought this was a good first impression if you had not seen Team Tremendous. They're a fun tag team.
Yeah, they're awesome. I think that's the thing is it's one of those you need that kind of lighter match on a show like this too where there's going to be so much heaviness, but it's weird because it doesn't take you out of it a little bit when the rest of the show is kind of played more serious. And also I kind of feel this later on with PJ's howling where it's like, is he a werewolf?
He's the Darewolf.
The Darewolf.
Darewolf.
But he doesn't think... It's not like we're supposed to think he thinks he's a werewolf, like a Chikara Elseworlds kind of...
No.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe animal. A little bit.
It's a spirit animal.
It's a spirit animal. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, like, it's just the... Like, it's like the, you know, it's played more for laughs. Does it take you out of it for the rest of the stuff a little bit, or no?
No, okay. Not for me.
Yeah, me neither, but I was just thinking that.
No, it clearly does.
No,
you hated this match.
I didn't hate this match, but, you know, especially because, like... You know, the first match plays into kind of like more of the main storyline and stuff like that. And
right.
Sort of like the other more serious storylines that are going on in the show and stuff like that. So, anyway.
Yeah. Bill Carr, very fun to watch, but at his size, doing the kind of stuff he does, I don't see a lot of longevity. I think he's going to have to curb some of that.
I also...
A 300-pound man should not be doing half the stuff he was doing in this match.
I'd be worried about the people catching him. Like, when he did that somersault... That his foot looks like it came down. I forget on whose head it came down on. I'm like, oh, that's lucky it didn't split his head open. Because, like, having done flips off the stage, that's the thing you got to worry about is, you know, a shoe coming down, the velocity a shoe comes down on.
Though, like, I also feel like if, let's say this guy ever makes it to, like, the WWE or if he ever gets signed, he's not going to be doing moves like this. They're going to tell him specifically not to do moves like that for a big guy.
Yeah, which to me somewhat handicaps the guy because that is what sets him apart.
Yeah, you have to realize, though, he probably is catering his style towards this type of audience.
Of course.
Too.
And, I mean, deceptively athletic for a guy that big to be doing what he's doing. But you are right.
But not a lot of definite – like, you know, like sometimes you see bigger guys like Kevin Steen. When he takes off his shirt, you know, you don't see that happen very often. But you know he's got, like, some muscles under there. It's just, like, not a lot of definition. A lot of muscles. There's a lot of muscles underneath that body.
It's the performance center. That's the difference. They don't have all that equipment.
Yeah. That's true.
Those performance center muscles. Yeah. The inner muscles. Matt Cage, who's a local New York guy, taking on AR Fox. And they had been introducing this new concept now where talent that was no longer with Evolve could still endorse new talent. So Matt Cage had been endorsed by UHA Nation, who at this point, of course, Apollo Crews in NXT. And thus was a storyline reason to introduce new talent, as if kind of like the Japanese system where you would have wrestlers and they would come up and they had their young boy for so many years and then he could come up as a protege of such and such. So I think that was the thinking behind this.
Well, that's the one thing involved. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say in Evolve there is definitely that sort of like, you know, it's not overly pronounced, but there's that Japanese influence of young boys. They talk about young boys later on, young boys coming up to break up the Roderick Strong match type thing. And so there are that. There's also like that sort of after-match main event promo type thing that I find very similar to Japan too. So there are those sort of Japanese references kind of running through and British references too.
Sure, yeah.
So UHA Nation was not in Evolve at this time, but... He gave a reference, essentially. He wrote a reference note.
They never showed the letter. It was more just verbalized on the broadcast. Like, you know, if you quit this show, Wei, I would just have to say that the new co-host was endorsed by Wei Ting.
Cool.
You know, maybe...
I like that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a message or something.
Let's come up with someone that Mauro Ranallo has endorsed now that he's in WWE, that we can just capitalize off of.
Maybe yeah, one John Pollock.
Have
John
you ever met Mauro?
No, I've never met
Because he endorsed
Mauro.
You.
Well, he did?
Yeah, he did.
Really? No, you're making that up. I'm a fan. I'm excited that he's there now.
Man, if you were a fish,
John, because you know what? Friends don't normally trick friends.
No, Damien, he definitely would endorse you. Number one, because you're a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Number two, he
fucked up was one of his favorite terms to describe surreal situation.
I remember in Aftermath one time, the look on his face was incredible.
Was this when he swore on the air?
He was visibly pouting. I'd never seen, like, just, like, so angry about having to watch it.
He's a method actor.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah. But I was going to say, also a huge advocate of marijuana.
Is he?
Huge. Oh, more marijuana.
He is in trouble.
If you went to the Situation Room together, you guys would blend together very easily.
Definitely.
Well,
so yeah, you would get along. Well, he's probably seen some of your stuff on Vice, I'd imagine.
I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited that he's there now because I think he is one of the best announcers.
But, who's going to be his color commentator or tater? Commentators.
Well, I was kind of thinking
the color commentator taught.
Yeah, Roman Reigns.
I was kind of what's Arda's name there?
Kyle Edwards.
Kyle Edwards. I'm like, what about that natural pairing?
I don't see them putting in someone that's not done commentary on their television.
I think like people are, you know, you were saying. I think you're the big advocate for the Daniel Bryan.
I'd like to see that team together.
I think it could kind of work. Cause,
I don't know if it would be a home run, but I would want to see it.
Yeah, maybe you do need a... why would I say...
The question is, like, what do you do at this point? You've got Booker, you've got Jerry Lawler, and to a degree you even have, like, you have Byron in the system, though he's on Raw. Did I mention Booker?
Mm-hmm.
Corey Graves? I mean, to just insert somebody new, like a Daniel Bryan,
yeah.
It's like, where are these other people going?
If Booker went back to when Booker was like kind of serious for that minute, do you remember? Like there was that kind of period where he wasn't doing like the.
I don't know.
What was that Shucky Ducky Quack Quack?
Was that the serious phase?
No, I thought there was like this minute because like I think he could be good, you know, and especially if like Moro. I think if Moro was in the booth and like JR, like you ever seen that clip where JR turns to Paul Heyman like you're gonna do good, kid. When they're first in the booth together, that's a terrible JR, I know. But
my God, there's a dream team. I'd love to hear Moro with somebody like Paul Heyman.
That'd be incredible. But no, but you remember that thing? Like, so Moro and all turns and goes, "Don't Booker T this. Be like, you know, be the best you can be because I know you can do this." You know, or JBL. If JBL went back to sort of more serious, you know, and worked with them.
Speaking
you know,
of Jim Ross interviews, I mean, is 2 years kind of your waiting period to release interviews?
Oh, the long-lost Jim Ross interview. I'm afraid you have to go to the head of content for Vice Canada to ask him why that interview is not coming.
When did that take place? I mean, you're just...
I've been to Electric Mud 2 times by now.
Yeah, I know.
Since then.
I know. I feel like my hands are clean of that situation. I don't have the footage.
You conducted the interview.
It'll come out when our Nunavut documentary.
You can blame me for the Lance Bangs podcast that I did that never came out because I didn't know how to edit at the time, and now it just feels super out of date. But that's the only one I can take blame for.
Yeah,
this Jim Ross one. I
the Nunavut documentary. It's always going to have a piece of my soul.
We're waiting for every person from that roster to make it into the WWE.
Well,
Kyle was the first.
We have a hell of a fucking like. The end of the documentary of where everybody went. Kyle Edwards, Michael Elgin, who, I mean, that was 2011.
Yeah.
And man, I know Ardo was just so mad we never got that thing done. But nonetheless.
You should put it out. You put it out for the 10-year anniversary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We have there's a Much Music never aired it, but I don't think they ever paid for the footage. I'm sure, in fact, they
just put the raw footage up. Where is the footage?
Somewhere.
Okay.
We shot a documentary of Fucked Up on Tour with the Foo Fighters. And I get a germs burn from them, which is where they put a cigarette out on my wrist. Like the Foo Fighters guys.
That's a germs burn?
And I have a yo-yo.
Oh, I've had that done to me, but it wasn't a ritual.
No, there's a germs burn. A germs burn is like, it's been handed from like, the first one was given by Pat Smear to Darby Crash. And you can, when you have it, you can give it. And it's been...
Wow.
That sounds stupid.
Yeah, it's
so have you
it's
given
stupid.
It? Have you given it to anybody?
Yeah, I've given it to 2 people, I think.
Did anyone acquire 100%. Germs and get sick as a result of it?
No, like, I don't lick it. Like, I just, you know, like
it's called the germs burn. Maybe you're not doing it right, if that's the name.
It's called the germs burn. No, it's meant to look like their logo, a circle. John is looking at it so mortified. But anyway... So I had that. There's a yo-yo battle that I have with Jack Black because Tenacious D was the opening band. Never done anything with that footage.
Nah. You want to lean over? You drop some names there.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Down at the ground.
Yeah, like, sorry. Like, my friend Kyle Edwards, my friend Michael Elgin. I was just, like, you know, making documentaries with him.
I didn't preface.
We're all deep in these names, John. Yours are people I respect more, wrestling people.
Well, let's chat a little bit about Matt Cage and AR Fox, then. As we mentioned, Cage making his debut for Evolve. These two had actually trained together in Atlanta, and thus the Uha Nation connection there, billed from Stone Mountain, Georgia, which has produced a plethora of pro wrestlers. Mm-hmm. Fox landed this bicycle kick before the bell even began, and then Cage came back with this Tope Con Hilo landing in the front row. Some of these fans nearly died during this show because there was no regard for any of these people in the crowd. It's like, you get the fuck out of the way or you're getting my boot in your face.
That's indie wrestling, though. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, you know, I remember going to a wrestling show up at Downsview a couple years ago, and it's like people come flying at you and it clears the chairs by you and stuff like that. So I think that's part of the appeal, is that you're going to see that stuff potentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might come out with a germs burn.
Well, like, you know, when you go and see a band show, like when you go and see the Stooges, your goal is that Iggy Pop's going to jump on you.
But when you go see Fucked Up, your goal is to get thrown off the stage by Damian Abraham.
Or hugged. I hug now. I don't throw.
Suplexed.
Sometimes.
I've seen you angle slam kids off of a stage.
Sometimes, hey, if there's any place that's safe to give someone an F5, it's into the loving hands of a crowd.
You had one of the most violent looking mosh pits when we saw you at the Great Hall, and this guy was up there and they dropped him and we just saw him plummet down head first, and I don't know how he didn't land on his head, because I feel he did, but he just went straight vertical to the ground from these people that just dumped this guy on his head. That's at worst neck.
That's why wrestling, you know, you need to learn how to tuck your chin. You know, that's like the first thing you learn, and that's definitely the first thing you need to learn at a show. Tuck your chin.
Cage got seated on the top and then drop kicked to the floor. Fox continued with a somersault dive over the corner post to the floor a la Ricochet and landing on his feet. Looked very spectacular.
It was amazing.
Fox then hit an ace crusher off the second turnbuckle. We then saw him going for the Kachahachame, the Taz mission, which was identified as from its judo origin here. The Enziguri by A.R. Fox, and then a springboard 450 for a two count. Springboard into a code breaker by Cage. And then he went for this headstand. Cage slapped him, set him up for this GTS, but instead of a kick, it was a punch to the face. Fox got out of that by grabbing the bottom rope, and it finished with a pair of running knees into the corner by Cage. Then a returning boot by Fox in the opposite corner. Two pairs of super kicks, leaps to the top, suplexes Cage off, then a 450 splash, and AR Fox wins in 12 minutes and 12 seconds. If you're critical of guys that do too much, this is not your match, but this was a rather impressive display by both men.
I think AR Fox is like the future of wrestling. I think he's amazing. I think he looks awesome. I think he's confident on mic and stuff like that. Obviously, you know, there's other things that are going to come up or maybe things happen, but like, I'm not even like one of those people that's really into people's bodies, but he's got an incredible physique. And so I really got excited on that one, but yeah, he does have an incredible physique, and he is, I could see him, you know, going all sorts of places as a talent.
Wait, what'd you think of the match?
I might be one of those people who are critical of you know, somebody doing too much in a match. And, you know, I thought very good, you know, like you guys say, both very tremendous talents, both guys. I was very impressed with Matt Cage as well. It almost seemed like they were kind of like creative wrestlers. Like, you know, when you make a video game, create a wrestler, you overload the movesets with all the cool moves from all the different positions. It almost felt like they were doing a little bit too much of, hey, look what I can do, look what I can do, look what I can do, instead of kind of, you know, stacking it so that you kind of have your very basic moves and then you get your high spots.
My rule of thumb is that if I'm constantly typing and I can't keep up with the moves, there's no way someone watching it can be processing all of this.
Mm-hmm. But maybe we're at that point where, you know, not every match, but like it's like the post Young Bucks kind of.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Yeah, I mean, right. Look how like that style worked for them.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And there's like, you know, like there's, it's almost like people like wrestling that's either super slow now or super fast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think you can have both. I think that's the fun part about a wrestling show is that you don't know what's going to work. You're going to put all these different ingredients into a bowl and hopefully at the end you have something that works.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be, you know, the next match, perfect example. They went significantly slower than the last match. It was Drew Gulak against Chris Hero, where Gulak came out. and cut a promo saying how wrestling has lost its integrity and his peers care about style over substance and impressing people as opposed to winning matches.
Do you think that was like a direct promo on the last match?
It naturally segued into
the promo. I'm sure it wasn't necessary on the last match, but probably the indie scene as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he looks at matches as a challenge ahead of him, and he goes over all the attributes of one Chris Hero, who then makes his entrance and comes out, and immediately Gulak grabs hold of Hero's left wrist and is controlling him, and they were just going back and forth here, trying to get control of the other, so some nice transitions here. Hero then went for an STF. He couldn't quite get the Hangman's clutch, and then Gulak escaped from a crossface. So they were having very much a catch wrestling match, Damien, to your liking, I'm sure.
I think I love this match. I love this. Is like, obviously people are going to say there's way better matches, even in Evolve. This is one of my favorite matches of last year, just because the story it tells in the beginning with the catch wrestling and Chris Hero trying to keep up with this guy who's obviously a younger, much more, I guess, schooled.
And the announcers did a very good job of
totally telling the story.
Telling that story. Yeah. That here's Chris Hero, who everyone knows he's left NXT. Is he on kind of a downward trend in his career? This guy is clearly on his way up. And Chris Hero is kind of, they kind of positioned him as kind of this, the bitter veteran, which is what he played on this show.
Yeah.
And Hero eventually was losing his cool, and we got into more kind of traditional offense in the corner. Gulak was coming back with strikes. Hero blocked a Gotch pile driver and then hit a rolling elbow on the floor. Hero's in control at this point as they get back into the ring, hits a senton and then a crossface, and Gulak is just repeatedly kicking out at one, and this is where the announcers bring up the possibility of having professional jealousy on Chris Hero's part. Hero then blocked the Saito suplex by grabbing his own foot and running it into the head of Gulak, which was a great spot. Gulak then hits the suplex, dropkicks the knee of Hero and would work that over. He applied an ankle lock. Hero rolled through. Then Gulak rolled back into the ankle lock. Hero finally broke the hold. Hero then catches him with another rolling elbow, getting a two count, hit a Liger bomb, another series of rolling elbows. Gulak backslid him for two, and then Hero slaps him, returns with his own. There's chops, ducks a rolling elbow, catches him with another, and then finally Hero is able to lift him up, hits his great looking tombstone pile driver, and he gets the fall and wins this at 19 minutes and 10 seconds. I agree with you, Damien. I thought this was the match of the show. I thought this was just under the recent match we watched from Bola with Hero and Timothy Thatcher. Gulak and Thatcher and Busick, you can put in that as well. Those three, they work a very unique kind of throwback style, and Chris Hero is just excellent in these kinds of matches. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed this match a lot.
Yeah, and I think it's just the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, God, whatever went wrong at NXT with Chris Hero, like, that's the one ingredient that's kind of missing from the Wyatt family, is like that intercontinental kind of like second, the one who's going to break off, you know.
I always felt Hero with a grown out like ugly beard, him and Harper's face,
their
faces are like, those totally pass as brothers.
Definitely.
They look so similar. I mean, in the eyes,
the thought I had, and I mean, I think everybody kind of knows the rumors, you know, of some of the criticism of him down in NXT was with the flab. I mean,
overlook the inner muscles.
The thing is, though,
the inner muscle for this guy is insane.
Well, why do we necessarily care about what he looks like, you know, what his body looks like, when we could easily put the guy in a shirt and, or even have him grow out, you know, the pudge and make him like a full-fledged, like, who thinks about what Luke Harper looks like underneath the shirt? Or who thinks about what Bray Wyatt looks like underneath the shirt? You know what I mean?
In Russian films, they have this thing called typage. Uh-huh. Where it was like you would cast based on someone's appearance, right? So if you were casting a capitalist, because it's obviously Soviet cinema, you'd cast someone that looked very pig-like, you know, and that would be your capitalist, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like, you know, WWE's gotten so into, like, everyone kind of having these amazing bodies, you forget that, like, different body types go with different personalities. And the idea of, like, an Air Fox looks amazing because next to Chris Hero, they look different, you know? And I was even watching Drew McIntyre, you know, Drew Galloway. Like, he looks
huge. He's a giant.
He's a giant.
Yeah.
you forget that. Yep. You know, you're in the land of giants. He looks normal size. And then you're like, oh, my gosh, he towers over these guys. And you're like, that's why they should have more populated by more sort of average looking people.
It certainly feels like in recent years they've been more relaxed about that. I mean, look at Kevin Owens, you know, and the push that he's received. But like, definitely for guys like a Chris Hero, and clearly Chris Hero is a guy without the genetics of, you know, the bodybuilders that they're perhaps looking for.
Yeah.
But like everything else, all of his other skills in professional wrestling are, you could say, out of 10. Oh, you know, yeah. The guy could promo, the guy could wrestle. And if this is the only thing that's holding him back, well, why not, you know, why not put the guy in a shirt and give him a different gimmick? Maybe part of that is you know, like him choosing this Chris Hero gimmick might be kind of to blame. Like being a guy who's wrestled kind of without a shirt in recent years. I don't know, but on this show he was certainly he had noticeably gained more weight than his NXT days. And in an AMA actually on Reddit, he talks about how during this time he had like a back injury and a mild thyroid issue that did some contributing to the weight gain at this time.
And I mean, he was a guy that too. You go back to his early like IWA CZW days. I mean, was significantly bigger, and then you saw him just get into ridiculous shape, teaming with Claudio in NXT. But this guy is seriously in 2015. He's one of the guys I enjoyed the most just watching it, with different guys, different scenarios. Great talker. I mean, just so many different ways to utilize this guy. And you know, I'm sure that there's a certain hardship being outside of the WWE. However, I would guess this guy is booked pretty well solid throughout the year. I don't doubt he's doing better financially now than an NXT developmental contract. Certainly that changes when you get to the main roster, but I don't think this guy is necessarily in a bad spot at all at this point. I mean, it's not every single guy that goes to NXT is going to get to the main roster. And if people have closed their mind to him ever getting to that main roster, he's better off in this kind of a spot where he can go out and he can work all his independent dates, he can work his NOAH tours, and make a very comfortable living.
Mm-hmm. And I think now, especially with the landscape of pro wrestling, the idea of him being utilized somewhere is there. You know, like there's someone that's going to realize that this guy is an unbelievable talent, regardless of whether or not you can count his abs. And someone's going to have to see that.
It goes as well to, I don't want to go completely off topic here, but one of the things that causes such a paranoia in pro wrestling is the fact that it's also subjective. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like you can point to wins and titles, and even drawing money is the most subjective thing in the world to say what people bought what for and who they paid to see. I mean, it's all comes down to a very finite amount of decision makers that say yes or no to a guy. And a guy like Chris Hero, it's one decision is the difference between this guy wrestling in front of 200 people here in Deer Park, New York, and being the third member of the Shield.
Mm-hmm.
When someone said, nah, we're not going to go with him. We're going to go with that Samoan guy, Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
And look at the career path. I mean, it's just, that's where this paranoia is, where guys will obsess about trying to control these decisions, and they're totally random. And there's no way to be able to overcome just the subject nature of how pro wrestling works and how decisions are made.
Well, that's the thing. Is like especially if you're like Chris Hero, you know, I guess Samoa Joe's now kind of in the system a little bit, but like you're someone who's dedicated your whole life to pursuing your craft, and you're at the top of your industry, and all your peers are kind of like going up to the next level, which you kind of like aspire to, and you just can't get there for some reason. That must be such a head fuck, you know. Like luckily, I was limited by the chains of a band name and by the way I look and my dreams and how far this band would go. So I exceeded all my wildest expectations, but I could only imagine if I was a pop star and had tried for that brass ring and failed, how hard it would be to kind of maintain doing music after that, because or to find the love of your thing because some weird factor prevented you from achieving your goal.
And you'd be doing the mall circuit.
I would do the mall circuit. I wanted to ask you though, do you think part of the reason of the kind of body fascism that goes on today in wrestling is, you know, obviously Vince McMahon's stuff, but is it also UFC and the idea that we all know what a fighter looks like now, and a fighter is a very conditioned. If you're a top level athlete,
if anything, fighter, I'd say the UFC has helped to kind of break those stereotypes because you're
fat UFC fighters.
Well,
now.
But I mean, not just fat, but like you look at who the light heavyweight champion is, you know, at 205, and that's considered sort of their marquee, at least in years past. Like you look at Chuck Liddell, obviously he's very fit, but he's not like jacked up, huge. You know, he's not a Brock Lesnar. I mean, Brock Lesnar was also champion, but
I think people look at a guy like. Look at Cain Velasquez. There's a guy who's 242 pounds that can easily go, not easily, but is, when he's not fighting in Mexico City, can go 25 minutes, incredible cardio, tremendous fighter. People are conditioned that that's what a fighter looks like. And on the other side, I mean, wait, you brought up Drew Galloway. Phenomenal look. Look in great shape, but not something that I think wrestling fans are, their jaw hits the floor when they see a physique like that. They're just, okay, that guy's in great shape. Let's see if he can go. If anything, the big bodybuilder look, I think to a lot of wrestling fans, it's like, okay, let's see what a disaster this guy is.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, when you see a Rob Terry, I mean, that's not...
I mean, a bodybuilder. I mean, like, you just don't see, like, fat guys anymore. You
know, I mean,
like, King Kong Bundy, no one would buy that guy's going to be a threat.
Who would you say? I mean, like, Roy Nelson, obviously. Roy Nelson is, like, you know, pretty successful.
Yeah.
Mixed martial artist. I feel like
I'm just trying to find hope for me.
I just think you could be a totally legitimate, you know, big guy wrestler or whatever. I think these days, though, what the UFC has shown is that skill can come in all different sizes.
Yeah,
you know, not just one particular look.
Mm-hmm.
After the match, they did a big angle here. Hero said that Gulak is a tough son of a bitch, and there are two types of people in this world: those that are coming after Chris Hero. And Chris Hero. Guess we're all coming after him.
The world's against him.
He makes a joke about Gulak having snap bubbles like Jim Duggan at WrestleMania 5 coming out of his mouth. And says people are not allowed to say his name until they have earned the right. And this leads to Biff Busick coming in saying he has earned the right to say his name because he is king shit. And Busick is simply the flavor of the week. And he tells Gulak that he has been addressed, and now get the fuck out of my ring. And uses Gulak to throw him at Busick. They fight. Busick goes for the choke, and Hero escapes and leaves, setting up their match for Evolve 40 over WrestleMania weekend. Gulak and Busick then shake hands, and the crowd applauds as Gulak exits. So, post-match was Chris Hero being a prick.
Mm-hmm. I like him as a bad guy, too. You know, like the bad Superman.
King shit.
You know?
That was his gimmick here.
And shit. And it's also bitter veteran, you know, and who, and I think that's like such
I love that cool story. Yeah, I love that storyline.
Up next was Caleb Konley, accompanied by his tag partner Anthony Nice, taking on the Darewolf, PJ Black, formerly Justin Gabriel, also starting up with Evolve. We have Black's debut here in Evolve, and this is when AR Fox joins them on commentary because he'll be taking on PJ Black in San Jose. They fought on the floor. There was a tornado DDT by Black using the post to DDT him on the floor. And during this, AR Fox made a Naomichi Marufuji reference, which Rob Naylor lost his mind over hearing the name Marufuji being used. Black then hoist Conley up in the corner, super kicks him to the floor from a headstand position, and then there's a suicide dive and a twisting tornillo dive to the floor. Lots of great spots here. Fox explains why guys wear gloves in the ring because of all the baby oil that some guys use. The baby oil epidemic way.
Getting onto the ropes.
Getting onto the ropes, and you want to be able to do springboards. So thus, the phenomenon that is ring gloves. And then we saw a springboard quebrada from Black off the top for a two count. Top rope hurricane rana by Conley is turned into a sunset flip roll up for a two count by Black. Then Conley hit this weird like deadlift into a power bomb for a two count. And the finishing sequence saw Black block a sunset flip powerbomb. Black got crotched. He then blocked a superplex, draped Conley's neck on the top rope, and hit a springboard 450 and got the win in 12 minutes, 24 seconds, and he was mimicking Fox's win using the same 450, setting up their match. This match didn't blow me away.
No, and I you know, it's so weird, because did you hear PJ Black on Colt Cabana's podcast?
No.
My God, does he have, like, no, obviously not to exploit tragedy, but he has the most insane story out of any person I've ever heard. Like, his father was murdered in front of him, and he is just such a compelling person that he finds, you know, like, he still competes in wrestling, even though that's his father's profession, all this sort of stuff. And it just, and he comes off so strong in this interview, and then you just watch him in these, and it's just like, and he's amazing in the ring.
Yeah.
And it's just, he needs to connect, I guess. Or find a way for the audience to connect to these two.
That's amazing to me, because I don't think I've ever heard him cut one promo during his entire time in the WWE.
He did one. Remember they did that NXT one where they all went down the line and they all got a turn to say a couple
things? As the, what was the thing after the Nexus?
No, this was before the Nexus. Oh, he was a werewolf. That was the thing after the Nexus, right? That's when he
a werewolf?
Was. Wasn't he, didn't they make him do a werewolf thing in what? WWE?
No.
I think he was doing those. Listen, the Justin Gabriel's WWE tenure is a bit of a blur.
The core is what I'm thinking about.
The core, that's
right.
That,
yeah. Splintered the two groups.
Yeah.
But
I was thinking about the John Cena one, where John Cena came out and ran them all down, down the line after they all went down the line to their promos. But anyway,
I don't know, but it's to hear something like that come out of a podcast. Drew Galloway later on talking about Chris Jericho's podcast, mm-hmm. giving him a forum for him to give his story. That's kind of the other big story coming from this show that I took away, was seeing all these former WWE talents get such a new, fresh skin to them and in these promotions. And, you know, we saw it on the PWG show with a guy like Evan Bourne, who's just amazing right now. Mm-hmm. And, you see it here with PJ Black, and you see it with Drew Galloway, guys who, clearly, we're obviously very frustrated showing up in show after show and probably not getting booked. But here, they just, even though they might be making a fraction of the money, they just look so much happier being able to fully express themselves and their skills in front of an audience. And I definitely got that sense.
Yeah, it really feels like there's an indie renaissance, like as far as like all the talent coming back. Like, not all of them, but like a lot of the talent that went away to when TNA wasn't allowing people to work outside dates or to WWE NXT or went away. A lot of those are coming back, and there's also sort of this new crop of people that are in the indie scene that are not ready to or not haven't made the jump yet, but you can tell are going to probably wind up becoming superstars in the future.
It's a great mix of like guys who have been through the WWE system, mm-hmm. but are now kind of refining themselves, and guys who are on their way to the WWE system, where they'll probably feel just as frustrated and then come back years later back to the indies.
Well, you can see, yeah, like you can tell that, you know, as much as people bemoan the fact that there's no territories now, like this is almost like the territories where you have these veterans coming back and working with these younger talents before they get scooped up, and they know. I'm sure, like, you know, backstage, these guys are being like, here's what they're going to be telling you. Here's what they're going to be looking for. Mm-hmm. Here's what they're going to critique you on. And sort of it's almost like a pre-course.
Next, we had first Anthony Nese cut a promo on having the best 450 in the business and called out Davey Richards for their match. Richards returned to Evolve. And the announcers were making this bodybuilding joke and saying how they should be in Columbus this weekend, which was where the Arnold Classic was going on that particular weekend. So there you go, tying everything about our body discussion into a very appropriate weekend here.
And they also brought up the World Bodybuilding Federation, too. Or was it the WBF? Was
yes.
It? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
They brought up another point in commentary.
Richards was very aggressive at the start, constantly going for submissions. They went to the floor, lots of big kicks to the chest from both individuals. At one point, Rick Rude pose was done by Davey Richards, like one of the most awkward acknowledgments by Davey Richards.
He did it so quickly, too.
Just felt the need for it. I mean, not really for any reason other than to do a Rick Rude pose.
It looked like a thing that he's probably doing regularly. Like, he was almost Like, the crowd seemed like they were expecting.
That would have been his NXT gimmick if they had signed him and Edwards.
And then he got up and he looked
Ravishing Richards.
Well, he was going to do another call-out taunt, it looked like. But then the ref interrupted him. And then he just
blew his spot.
You can't have that.
Yeah, exactly. You can't do that.
Yeah. Nice then went after the left arm of Richards. Richards then tied the arm up with his legs and then wrenched back on Nice's legs. This was like a modified sharpshooter without the leg in between Nice's legs. Looked very cool. Richards went to the floor. Nice hit a suicide dive. This move has become just suicide for me to be continuing to watch. We need... The suicide dive needs to just not happen for like a year.
I do like the baseball slide kick out of the ring because I think that would be more of an effective move.
But the suicide dive gets such a big reaction. I mean, not huge.
Does
it? It gets a good reaction every time.
If you go over the top rope, it does.
No, even when you go through the middle, man. Like, it's just crazy still seeing a guy jump through the ring to the floor.
Richards then runs his boot from Nice on the floor, and Nice gets the heat at this point using a crossface. Nice then hit a moonsault into the feet of Richards. They had a forearm exchange. Richards is then hitting him with headbutt, sending Nice off the top turnbuckle. Comes back with a flying knee to Richards and hits a TKO. And then Nice blocks a stretch muffler attempt, misses a double foot stomp. Nice then lands on his feet from a German attempt, and Nice hits his own double foot stomp. Richards fires back with kicks to the chest, Nice with chops, and then Nice hits the Omori driver, gets a two count, misses his 450 splash, and Richards fires up, penalty kick, double foot stomp from the top. It's a near fall. Then kicks him in the head, another two count, and then the stretch muffler is applied by Richards, and he taps out Nice, 21 minutes and 16 seconds.
I love David Richards, too. I'm glad he, you know, I love what getting to see him wrestle, and I don't like that howl on the top rope thing, you know, especially maybe it's after PJ Black did the same thing.
That's building.
Wolves here.
But it's just like, I know it's the Wolves, but like,
They're waiting until they go to London.
Well, and also,
no,
like,
the new Wolf Pack.
It also took, because like, he worked so quickly. I forget the setup for it. He faked him out, I think, with like a Shining Wizard, maybe. And then he quickly ran to the top rope. He scurries to the top rope. And then he stops and does that howl before he pulls the 450 off the top. And it's like,
You'd rather not no howl?
No howl. That would alert the guy. He's like, oh, he's going for something. I'm going to roll out of the way.
His body's been taken over.
The howl.
But you know, like, they teach wrestlers to, like, throw the pose and, you know, like the throat slash and all that at probably the most inopportune times. But.
Yeah.
Maybe you should have signals for when a big song's coming up, like in between.
Oh, I do.
Right before
this is the last
verse.
One. Get ready. Here comes the other show.
No, right before non-speaking.
Right before you get into like a big chorus or something, you should signal.
You start smacking the stage and then make a hand sign.
Stomp your foot.
I definitely have done those. Like, I do the diamond cutter on stage. Like, not in the move, but I'll do the setup for it, you know, all the time. And you know, throw up the four and things like that, you know. That gets the audience into it.
Wow. Not at all. Man, the guy's going to do a Jay-Z cover.
What?
Because he does the diamond cutter sign.
Oh, yes. Davey Richards and Anthony Nice, I think both guys are just so awesome, especially at that stiff Japanese style.
I get tired watching Davey Richards wrestle because he goes at an insane pace, and he'll do it for 45 minutes if he feels like it.
The thing is, though, I was watching this, and like clearly they were, staging this whole match, building all the spots to like a big kind of epic feel with a lot of near falls, but the crowd just didn't seem like they were playing along, and so it felt like they were kind of wrestling to almost seemed like an empty arena, and so everything kind of felt a little flat and not as dramatic as probably what they were hoping for.
I thought that where this match and the one prior to it with Conley and PJ Black, it felt like every match on the show kind of had its identity, and these two to me were just kind of almost reflections of one another, where you did have the tag team in individual singles matches, and I just felt these two matches were somewhat mirroring one another, and they were the two matches to me that didn't have as much of a lasting impression, whereas everything else on this show kind of had its own kind of circumstances behind it. I had a big takeaway from it, and these two were just, I mean, they were just guys going out there and having very good matches, but not a lot that I really look back at afterwards with much.
I love Nice because I think he's got so much personality, and I think that came across. But yeah, like it was, you know what? It almost maybe felt like you needed a little bit of a break after the earlier stuff that...
Well, they were about to get a major break at this show to set up the cage, which would be a 30-minute wait period for this crowd, thankfully edited for the on-demand version.
I wish that was a bonus feature on the...
the 30-minute cage setup.
Should have been on the poster.
I imagine that would have been like, what do you mean it doesn't fucking fit?
All right, let's talk about this cage and describe it for people who haven't seen the show.
Awful.
It looks like the panels are, I'm going to say, 10 inches too short.
They're sitting on the floor instead of on the apron.
Yeah, they're sitting on the floor instead of the apron. And they're also...
Giant gaps between,
like,
the apron.
I don't know what it was, whether or not, like, maybe the ceiling was too low or I don't know, but... It seemed like somebody fucked up the measurements, perhaps, or maybe they just got a wrong size cage for this ring.
They saw Drew in the ring and realized that he towered over the cage no matter which way they put the wall.
Well, maybe. Yeah. They did mention on the show that it's incredibly hot in this building, and maybe it had, because typically heat will make metal expand. And they had measured it when it was much colder and had been contracted. And now the measurements were off. Right. I mean, bridges have giant shifts during the winter because of the contraction.
Yeah.
Thank you, Professor.
Wow. But I think it worked, too. Like, they incorporated
Come on. How did these fuck-ups work?
I agree with Damien.
When
it
he was
totally
hammering
did.
In between the cage and then he fell between the cage and the ring.
They made it work. They made it work. But if you're just, like, tuning in, like, you look, wow, it took half an hour for them to make that. Like, it looked kind of rinky-dink. Like, to the point where, because the cage was sitting on the floor instead of on the apron, the doorway... is like only half the size because half of the door is on the apron.
A good launch off a back body drop. This match is the guy clears it.
Half the door is on the apron, and so the other half that leads you into the cage is like very short. It goes up to the dude's waist, and so Roddy on his entrance starts to walk in, and he's just there's like a funny moment where he just looks and says, "I don't, you know, like this is like a dangerous work environment or something."
Yeah.
But they, I thought they did make use of, you know, kind of the ridiculousness of the situation during the match.
So we had, after the intermission, they came back here, and they did show a video for the main event with Strong saying in the lead-up to this match he's going to prove Galloway being a failure as Evolve champion just as he was a failure in the WWE. And their last match at Evolve 36 ended with this brawl going all over the arena to necessitate the cage being used. They fought to a no contest. They mentioned this is the first cage match in Evolve's history. And then Roderick comes out for the match, and he cuts a promo on everyone.
John, two things. The previous match, Ybor City, that's where MSL lives, I think, and Ferrara. And number two, played that venue.
That they had that match. Nice. Played this.
And also, it did necessitate a cage. Like what they said... were like, I'm like, okay, like, opposed to now when you're watching Hell in the Cell pay-per-view and they're just like, oh, this isn't a cage. The setup was like, they brawled all over the place and they injured a ring announcer in the setup. So it's like, this should be in a cage. There was a reason for the cage to happen.
Yes. So Strong is out and attempted to cut a promo on everybody, saying that all the people have been saying Galloway has so much potential after he'd been cut by the WWE, but the mic is constantly cutting out. He acknowledges that this microphone sucks. He disagrees with the comments that Drew has made about him and says that he is, in fact, a bad motherfucker. Very hard to make out any of this. Drew then runs down, attacks him on the floor. They fight around the ring into the backstage area and finally make their way into the ring for the beginning of this cage match. This can only end with a pinfall, submission, or knockout. So if these two were to be fighting on the outside panel of the cage and a guy hit him so hard that he fell down to the ground like Dean Ambrose recently, he would not be the winner. A cage match should be contested.
Yes. Yeah. They weren't trying to climb this cage.
Don't injure someone too much because you might lose. Strong quickly gets on offense. He lays out Galloway in the corner. He's just beating down on him. This is where we got the belt and pretty blue cage references to the WWF's idiosyncrasies. Strong then comes back into control after Galloway runs him into the cage. Galloway hit this inverted Alabama slam, swinging Strong by his legs onto his chest, and then his lawn darting Strong repeatedly into the cage. Strong then hit an Olympic slam a la Damian Abraham at a show, and then hit a backbreaker for a two count, then takes a back body drop into the cage by Drew. They're trading boots, series of flying knees by Roderick, a gut buster, a tiger driver, and Galloway is kicking out. Naylor then fears that someone is going to die as they climb the turnbuckle by what he describes as the rickety cage. Galloway gets crotched on the top. He's in the Tree of Woe position and then did this spot that he's now made a kind of regular deal where he's in the Tree of Woe and then just like sits up and suplex the guy off the turnbuckle. And for all I know, this might have been the first time he did this, but this crowd responded like they had never seen this before, and it looks really cool.
This is when the crowd actually got into it, which is a miraculous thing. There was a 30-minute setup time that would have probably killed, you know, if a band took too long to set up, it kills the vibe for that. But, yeah, this is definitely when you can see the crowd is like, you know, it's not packed, but you can feel them a little more.
That move is really cool. I've never seen it before. But, yeah, it basically just kind of does a crunch, big crunch out of the Tree of Woe. And I guess it probably helps that he's so much bigger than a lot of the guys on the roster that he can, you know, even while sitting down, be able to pull this off.
Yeah, he's probably like a giant spider monkey just putting his giant limbs.
It's one of those moves, though. It's like the first time he, like, his ribs are hurt or something and he can't do it, it'll be such an awkward.
Oh, yeah.
It was like when Bray, when he'll do the spider walk, like every time, I just think of the time that his arms gave out and he fell and had to reposition himself. So you better have 100% accuracy.
But then it sets the person up for like a top rope face stomp.
Yeah, it's totally geared for an Alberto Del Rio.
See, it would be a scenario where that Del Rio move would actually make sense.
Yeah, the guy's in the Tree of Woe.
Yeah.
So Galloway is then, he shoves the referee away, and Strong then kicks Galloway low, hits a pair of flying knees to Drew, a discus forearm, the end of heartache, Galloway kicks out, then Galloway is sent into the cage, and he comes up and he's bleeding from the forehead, more flying knees by Strong, then Galloway slaps him, takes four sick kicks, and then Galloway is stuck with his head against the cage and it's just lodged between the cage and the apron. More drop kicks, and this is sending Galloway's head into the cage, and finally the referee calls for the bell and Strong wins by knockout at 21 minutes and 10 seconds. And then there's a post-match attack as he applies the stronghold onto Galloway. PJ Black runs in for the save, and before we get into all the back and forth here, the match, 21 minutes and 10 seconds worth. What did you think of the first cage match in all of history?
Like, obviously, you know, cage, you know, issues withstanding. I thought it was great. I really liked it. I think Drew McIntyre, you know, obviously he's not the promo, which I think probably was his issue for over there. But,
you know, I don't honestly, like, I'm sure there are a lot of issues, but he sounded like a decent promo on this. He sounded like a fine promo, my mic issues aside.
Yeah, mic issues. Fine. I guess that played such an issue, too, the mic issues.
But going back to our discussion about the cage, I thought the cage actually made this match memorable. Like, the fact that this was such a shitty, broken-down cage. And they totally used it for the finish.
Yeah.
They had the guy trapped in between the giant wedge between the cage and the apron, allowing Roddy to repeatedly do those drop kicks to knock Drew out.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, in a way, like, very brilliant, you know, taking a negative and turning it into a positive. So I enjoyed this cage match a lot. It was, and just like the PJ Black match, it's really nice to see a guy totally reinvigorated and be able to wrestle a 20-minute match.
Oh, yeah.
Like you know.
I would put Galloway right near the top of the list of guys that, I mean, he has not been hurt at all by being cut by WWE. He is someone that, I mean, is, I think, a very underappreciated talent when he was in WWE, when you see what he's doing now, and one of the guys that has been a standout over the last year or so.
But someone that can flourish on the indies where he can be the big guy, you know, and he can be the Kevin Nash style. Well, not style, obviously, thank God. But, I mean, like, sized guy compared to Davey Richards or compared to...
I never looked at him as a baby face at all, but like the story he kind of tries to convey at right now in Evolve, like, really makes sense. And I think we have to commend, obviously, Roderick Strong as well, who's just so good, you know. And I think right now has become such a fantastic heel, both in ring and on the mic, that he's just, any show I see him on, he's just he's a stand-up
guy.
I
think this was unbelievable. 2015, I think, was his best year, and I hope he gets some acknowledgement as everyone goes into their year-end stuff, because he had a real tremendous year working mm-hmm. with such a diversity of opponents and different promotions, and is one of those guys that has the ability, while in Ring of Honor, it's not an exclusive deal, and he has the ability to work for an Evolve and can go work for other promotions. So he can go to a lot of different places, and I really hope he's one of those people, as everything's shaking out with a lot of free agents with Ring of Honor, that he can be one of those guys that can become part of the crew that does go to New Japan, because I think he'd be a breath of fresh air in their junior heavyweight division, mm-hmm. in their junior heavyweight tag division. He's somebody I think that could truly flourish over there with that talent.
I think it's also kind of fun now that you almost have a super indie, in the sense that all the indies are one giant indie, because mm-hmm. and Colt Cabana's podcast and so many things are a part of it. Like, we all know, you know, these WWE guys' stories, these ex-WWE guys' stories now. We know everyone's stories. Like, you know, we know about people being bitter or not being bitter, perceived being bitter for not, you know, achieving what they've done. We know about people, you know, being reinvigorated by being let go of that system. And so it's like, we're all...
There are great storylines to be told. Yeah. Like, no matter what your position is in professional wrestling. Like, you know, like, whatever. Like, Chris Hero being a perfect example. A guy who didn't necessarily achieve his goal of being in the WWE, but there's great drama in that story.
Yeah, and I can buy Chris Hero, though, in this match, being this guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though I know he's a likable person because I hear him on Colt Cabana's podcast, but I could buy him.
I swear you've got an endorsement deal here.
Well, no, he's
with
my
all podcasts.
Influence. He's the reason I have a job going in 2015 with my, well, not a job, but at least a podcast, because he was the big influence on me. And also, I owe wrestling. I guess I haven't told this story. I got beaten up on stage this summer at a festival.
Oh, wow.
We were playing this big festival in Liverpool, of all places, home of Robbie Brookside, the greatest punk wrestler of all time.
Sort of breaking ground.
Yeah. I got jumped in the middle of the set while we were playing by a bunch of chav dudes, which is like kind of like, I don't know, English.
Like douche?
Douches? Dudes. Yeah, basically. Yeah. I jumped off the stage. They were picking on this couple, and then tried to push them out of the show with a big group of... They don't have security guards at these things. They have these marshals, right? These marshals are just like... They can't,
marshals? What yeah, am I? What
they
are
can't
they?
Touch people, and they're not very big. But
do they wear like the Bobby hats?
No, they have just like a yellow vest on, or an orange vest, and the security guards have yellow vests. Anyway, so we're all kind of pushing human wall style these people out of the show, this big stage type thing, and this one dude runs back and just pops this couple in the face. Each of them punches like the guy and the girl in the face.
Jeez.
So I run over and I tackle them into like a security barricade, and then I don't know how to fight. You know, hence why I'm asking you guys about catch wrestling, right? So what do? I go to what I know.
I don't know how to fight.
Pro wrestling.
Poke in the eye.
So, no, I grab this dude and I see we watched Joe versus Necro before, you know? So I see a security gate on the ground.
Just threw him on the exposed floor.
Sidewalk slam on top of the security Holy gate and shit. Just throw all my weight on top of him. And I'm just, you know, it's bad. And then this other dude comes running over and kicks me in the head. So I grab his leg, and I'm trying to put him in an ankle lock. Because, you know, I'm like, wow. What do you do?
So that would not be the go-to.
What's the best shoot move?
And then another dude comes over and just punches me in the head.
Well, the funny part is, like an ankle lock, like, I imagine you were going for the Kurt Angle version.
For the Kurt Angle version.
Make sure to sell.
I'm trying to lock it in with putting my scissors on his calf. I don't know what the fuck.
I'm sure that would work, yeah.
You know, he was screaming.
If you're a big guy, like...
Oh, it was like... I'm like, I know I would have snapped his leg if I kept going, because he was screaming, like, you know. But then it was just like, wham, wham, wham. I'm like, a million fists come raining down on me, so I just tuck.
God. I picture this guy, like, in a street fight, and it's a guy got him up for an airplane spin or something. It's like, I don't know what to do. I just monkey flipped him.
I have no fucking idea what I'm supposed to do.
Is there video of this?
I don't think so, because none of it's ever. It's weird. Like, no one's
ever. And this was during your set.
It was during our set.
So what happened? Was it temporarily stopped?
Well, then, so the marshals are keeping people away that are trying to break it up, right? And so eventually it gets broken up. And I get up. My band at this point realizes what's going on. They've jumped off this because it's a big festival stage. Not the main stage, but it's the second stage. But and ensuring the Flaming Lips set, too. Hence why there's a lot of security over there. And why we have a lot of marshals at our stage. Talk about a mismanagement of resources.
I don't expect many fist fights at the Flaming Lips.
Everyone's in there protective bubbles. So no one can get out.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're over there doing. But like, there's a lot of jocks that like the Flaming Lips. I imagine there's some. You know, anyway, so we get up, I get up, I'm just like,
jeez.
Oh, like blood on my face, like, you know, I've been like stomped, you know, for like a minute. Yeah. And I did cover up pretty good though, like all things considered.
He stomped you in the face?
The guy was like stomping on, they're stomping on me. I'm like covering up and there's like feet coming down on my arms and stuff. And you know, like my ear was all fucked up.
Holy Christ.
It was nuts.
And were there any like legal repercussions?
Well, like, I haven't even told the story very much, even. Like, I've told, like,
I can't believe this wasn't a big story when this happened.
Well, because I didn't want to give, like, I'm not going to call the cops because I'm not that dude, you know? Like, I don't want to get the cops involved because I just don't want to have that be that part of that situation.
You're not a snitch.
Well, like, yeah, but not even on that kind of level, but I just didn't, you know, so.
Well, yeah, it's more trouble for everybody.
Yeah, like, it was, you know, I'll tell you one thing. Probably not going to play Liverpool Sound anymore.
Oh boy,
no, Gauntlet's Sound
been
City
put down.
Not going to play it again. But yeah, so like you know, it gets breaking up. Apparently, these guys were off-duty security guards. I heard too. Afterwards,
only the best for Damian Abraham.
I picked the wrong fight to have, but it was thanks to pro wrestling that I was able.
Thanks to Kurt Angle, it sounds like.
I sent a message to, here's a name drop for you, John. Boom, Robbie Brookside on Twitter being like, "Let Samoa Joe." Know that if it wasn't for Necro Butcher versus Samoa Joe, I would have had no offense in that fight. Like, that was the only thing I learned that actually was, like, really effective. Well, the Kurt Angle, like I stand behind. If it was just me on that guy one-on-one, I would have had
So is this, like, the... did we get the exclusive here on the behind the scenes of this big fight?
I think this is it.
I think people... exclusive. Are people going to, like, transcribe this answer? Damian Abraham... fucks up fan.
Yeah, major news story for nobody.
They're not going to make it this deep into a podcast.
No, this is like
you're not a wrestling.
This is like a Easter egg for.
If
people.
You're not a wrestling fan, you probably would have tuned out like 7 minutes in. You would have tuned out.
Also, my Roderick Strong story,
please,
now feels very anticlimactic.
You built it up for 2 hours.
When I was going to shoot that Vice weed documentary, at like 6 a.m., I'm going to Colorado. I walk through security. Who do I see? Roderick Strong.
Was he the security guard?
No.
Oh.
He had just been wrestling at Smash Wrestling.
Was he the security guard?
Well, he just said he's so fast. No,
sorry. I had a misspeaking moment, and John, of course, jumps on me and humiliates me on the podcast.
Did you talk
to him? LOL, Jericho waited a year before he put up that podcast.
Did you talk to Mr. Strong?
I did. I went up to him and I'm like, Roderick Strong. And he's like, whoa.
Can you teach me the sick kick? I need it.
I'm like, are you? I'm like, oh, that's amazing. Like, you're one of my favorite wrestlers. And he's like, wow, that's awesome. And I'm like, yeah. And then he's like, cool. So we're just standing there.
It's always awkward.
It's so awkward. Why is it always that awkward?
You got to follow up with something beyond that.
I did. Then I was like,
I'm pretty big too. No.
I went to. I actually have.
You told the Bryan Danielson story, didn't you?
I did. I said, I'm a contracted Ring of Honor talent myself.
Hey, I have a connection to you. Here it is. Damien's like the misconnections of like just the wrestling world.
I try. I try so hard. And then he's like, oh, cool, man. And I'm like, cool. And then I didn't ask him for a photo, which is probably what I should have done.
No, it was, especially at an airport. Especially. Yeah, you can't be doing that stuff.
No, well, what do you...
I should be. This is the era that you're supposed to do it. I'd have more Instagram followers if I did that shit.
How do you... like, if somebody comes up to you as a fan of yours and just says hi, like, do you consciously try to avoid just, you know, being having the cool response?
Yeah, I definitely go out of my way to make it not awkward a lot of
times. What do you do?
I just, like, I'm like, hey, man, that's awesome. Nice to meet you. I'm Damien. And then we just go.
You're like, it's like very friendly. You're very nice to your fans. I've seen.
I'm just grateful.
But do you ever, like, get you must get tired, you know, especially after a show.
Of course,
or
man.
Like
you're
that.
On the road. There's going to be downtimes.
Yeah, but that's my band takes the brunt of that. Oh. You know, like my band and you know, obviously the people around me unfortunately take the brunt of that. But like the fans are the only reason that you're able to keep this going. Like the moment you lose that, not that he did, like not that he was like, oh, get the fuck away from me. He just wasn't like, here's my phone number. Let's be friends forever, which is kind of what I was hoping was going to happen. but instead, it was more.
Wait till he hears this review.
I tell you, he was awesome. That's the end. What do you mean? You think he's going to be pissed?
No. I'm saying this
now is
gonna
the
end.
Now it's going to be super awkward.
He's going to hear the story.
The worst story.
This is going to be the pull away.
I remember the worst story I ever heard that I could not imagine having to be in the situation. It was
CM Punk on the Wedge.
No. But it does have to. It was a CM Punk story, though. He was on some guy's podcast and was explaining that at an airport once, a fan went up to him. Not only did this guy have his headphones on, the fan pulled the earbud out of his ear.
Who the fuck does that?
Yeah, that's disrespectful.
That more than crosses the line. And if you caught me at the wrong moment, I think I would hit that person.
Yeah, and
it's such a, like, you are making me absolutely uncomfortable right now, and it's like the equivalent of that guy that, like, flicks you in the ear.
Well, that's your personal.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt, but it fucking pisses me off.
I mean, your earbuds are your personal space. This
like,
is the thing.
Do you ever get your earbuds caught on, like, a doorknob and it gets ripped out? Like, it might be the worst feeling.
No, not the worst. But
I get really angry, really fucking angry when that happens.
And
that's my fault. If it was someone else's fault.
If you're CM Punk, you know how you make that not happen? Wear a suit. Fly in a suit. No one would.
How's that going to stop someone from pulling
no
a headphone
one would expect,
out of your
because
ear.
Like, be like, oh, here's some guy flying in first class wearing a suit. Otherwise, it's like, oh, here's the guy that dresses exactly like he does on TV walking through the airport.
There's tons of talent that have to adhere to a dress code.
I know, but that's why I would say those ones would be, I would be like, if I were them, travel dressed down. You know, if you're like Ric Flair, travel in a sweatsuit.
How about this for fans out there? Have some respect.
That's true. That's probably the easier way, John.
That one goes a long way. Don't pull earbuds out of ears. Would you ever do that?
No, God, no.
Even if you saw, I don't know.
I brought CM Punk a present and it didn't go well. I could only imagine if I ripped his fucking headphones out.
I think you need to have some therapy lessons on that day in your life of the Wedge.
That day, because it was.
I think it's done legitimate trauma to you.
What was also, it was just the day where my ego was brought down just a couple pegs.
Maybe that was a good thing.
It was because I had such a good run of meeting celebrities that I wanted to become friends with and became friends with them. So then when someone didn't have me, it was just like a total overprivileged, like, moment for me. But still at the same time, it was awesome because he did reprimand me for calling it a belt.
Well, there you go. And that ties into it, to our wonderful review. As we get back here, we still have more to talk about here.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Because afterwards, when Black made the save, he got on the shitty microphone, he handed the Evolve title over to Drew and tells him to do the right thing and make their match in San Jose a title match, saying how they trained together in England a decade ago. They had battles in the WWE and what memorable battles they were on
Superstars.
And then Drew says the title is not the most important thing anymore. Says he will defend it anywhere. The feud with Strong is not over. And he wants to unify the Evolve title with the Open the Freedom Gate title with Johnny Gargano in Dragon Gate USA, their sister promotion, over WrestleMania weekend, which they would do. And that is how the show ended, with a big match being set up for WrestleMania weekend and two title matches.
It was, I mean, it's hard to not pay attention to the microphone and the sensitivity of the microphone in this segment, because Drew would, like, be standing up talking and the mic would cut out. But then at one point he took a knee and then the mic worked perfectly.
Yeah.
He lowered his body and all of a sudden the mic worked perfectly.
They're like our headphones.
Yeah, so I don't know what was up, but then at one point he stood up again and the mic stopped working. I'm like, you should just get, like, sit back down, sit back down.
It's probably because it has a vertical height limit on the range.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know, which just happened to be the level of the ring.
I hate this microphone.
But, yeah.
I also could tell he was a little out of it.
Just, well, he had just done a 20-minute match.
Yeah, like, he just seemed like...
And he had his head legitimately rammed into a cage.
I was like, poor guy, having to go there. And
but here, he basically has to... He basically, like, sets up the next four matches he has. And,
this guy was Conor McGregor.
Yeah, but what he spoke was, I thought, very heartfelt. You know, it seemed incredibly genuine. You could tell he almost kind of... It felt like he got very emotional. And this is where he thanks guys like Jericho for giving him the forum to speak about his story and for believing in him. So it was just a very nice, genuine moment that was unfortunately hindered by the microphone issues.
Which is unfortunately hindered by the microphone.
Yeah.
But yes, overall, I enjoyed this show quite a bit. I really enjoyed the Drew Gulak-Chris Hero match. I give this show a 6 out of 10. I think of all of them, I'm certain, has had better shows. They probably had worse shows. But this set up a lot for WrestleMania weekend. I think if you watch this show, you were interested to see a lot of these matches play out during that weekend. And that's what this show was largely designed to set up a bigger show in a couple of weeks. Or series of shows.
I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10, but that's just because the Gulak Hero match was one of my favorite matches of last year. And just because I think I love that storyline. I think... You know, the show was what it was, but I love that match, and I think I'm excited about independent wrestling. I think mm-hmm. it's a good time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, and you can support these folks at wwnlive.com if you want to go watch this. Or, I mean, they have a gigantic library of events.
Tons.
On
with tons of promotions.
Tons of promotions. I feel that they were the most ahead of the curve when it came to taking the live iPay-per-view concept and building something in-house where they could take in all the revenue, get a bunch of promotions under one banner, and have a streaming service where now there are streaming services popping out. It's almost become a necessity for companies to have this revenue source where you can put all your events up on demand. And when you've got WWN Live and you've got Progress and you've got Traditional Championship Wrestling just launched a streaming service. There's just so many of these and not enough dollars to float around. I mean, WWN Live was, I think, very much ahead of the curve when it came to seeing that this was kind of where things were shifting from just being able to buy a show live to having it on demand and always there to be able to watch.
I think everything's going to shift to a Netflix model, like our YouTube model, or like that's where people want.
Like a WWE Network model.
A WWE Network model now, too. Yeah, where you have, like, houses of... And I think that's the best thing WWN Live has realized is that you need that content library, and you need to have a lot of partners that have that massive content library. Like, obviously, the smaller places have their loyal followings, and I think, especially in the UK, Progress Wrestling is very well set up to be...
They're the rare one that I think can stand alone and maintain an audience. I think a lot of other promotions, they're going to attempt to launch their own, realize the volume isn't there, and they're going to have to probably merge with others so that you can have a kind of a super service, which is what WWN Live is. It's not just for Evolve. It's all of this stuff.
A Super Clash.
The Super Clash 4
in
the making. That should be the name of the service. It's going to be interesting where this technology goes and how many can make any of these viable, because there are so many of them popping up.
Yeah.
I give the show a 7 out of 10 right in between you guys. I thought overall it was very enjoyable. Again, just to kind of sample another side of the indie scene that I've heard so much about. I thought, you know, this show featured like a great mix of talent of new and old, and everybody seemed to bring something different to the table. The negatives, of course, are the production, you know, and that's something that... you know, like, I know, like I said earlier, that, you know, for an indie bare bones promotion, I'm not expecting huge levels of production, but I do, at the very least, if you're going to charge somebody to buy a DVD or buy a streaming service, I think the least you can ask for is something like a working microphone that doesn't, affect the product. And this is something that I hope their relationship with the WWE will at least help in a little bit, because I feel like
microphones.
Yeah, can you lend us a microphone, Triple H? I think if anything, they have to gain from it production value is something that I'm sure the WWE can easily give some pointers and maybe even some money.
They could have invested in someone to maybe subtitle the promos on this on-demand release.
Sure.
Much like Access did with New Japan. I mean, especially on this show where there was a lot of angles being shot to make money on WrestleMania weekend. Like, those promos were more important on this show than your typical Evolve show where it's just show to show. This was kind of setting up a lot of big things in place for your biggest weekend of the year.
What do you know about, like, that working relationship with the WWE? What exactly does that entail?
I mean, it's not anything that's like a formal agreement they have. It's just an acknowledgement that they will work with each other. I mean, thus far, all it's led to was Sami Zayn was loaned over to them for an autograph appearance and could not appear on their iPay-per-view. So I don't look at it as the kind of game-changing relationship, at least at this point, because I don't know how much Evolve necessarily gets out of that. Their next shows, I mean, they're running shows the same weekend as the Royal Rumble in Florida. They're going to be doing three shows crowning their tag champions, and they're not really in sync with, I mean, NXT is running tapings that weekend, the Royal Rumble. So I don't know really how deep this relationship goes beyond, you know. It's Evolve, I think, could serve as a pipeline. The talent can go there, and when they're ready, the next step is NXT.
And have we seen talent from Evolve go up to NXT for select dates or anything like that?
I mean, they've had, you know, guys like Johnny Gargano. He's been a regular on NXT. He's not under contract there, but it hasn't been a case where, Evolve talent is floating over to NXT.
Hmm.
So it's kind of just, it's in place that they talk to each other. They're open to ideas, but there hasn't been a whole lot to say of the relationship thus far.
I guess it's like almost a totally new shift in culture for WWE at this point. Like, it's an acknowledgement that indie wrestling exists. It's been like a slow thing. It's like a CM Punk with the ROH clips.
Yeah.
And Gabe being on that documentary, I guess. Like, I guess that's the thing about Gabe, is he's kind of maybe the Paul Heyman of this more recent era, like, where a lot of people have kind of come through
Gabe.
You know,
ROH,
and if you look at the people that are kind of stars now that haven't developed in house, and there aren't that many that have developed completely in house, but a lot of them come through Gabe.
Certainly. I think that you look at PWG and you look at Evolve. Mm-hmm. That if there is a talent you haven't heard of that is on one of these cards, he's worth a look. He's worth your time if they've been booked by a Gabe Sapolsky or by a PWG. I would even say a PWG. You're pretty familiar with the names, even if you haven't seen them at this point. Whereas Evolve, I mean, they're finding the Matt Cages of the world, and people are discovering them on these shows. So that's always been a big benefit of Evolve.
And I think it's going to be, if you do have an indie fed that does have, you know, is the AA to the AAA, that's NXT, to the major leagues, that's the main product. That would be so attractive if you were I would imagine, if you're a talent.
There's a role for these people. When you have 90 guys at the Performance Center under deals, not even half those people are on television. And if you want to have them get some seasoning, you can go work locally here in Florida.
Eva Marie at the next Evolve.
Be great. So there you go. That will wrap up our review portion of Evolve 38, and we will be joined momentarily by the man that runs the show in Evolve, Gabe Sapolsky, joining us on Review Away. Joining us here on Review Away, it would not be a complete review of Evolve 38 unless we chatted with the founder, the booker, the man behind Evolve, Gabe Sapolsky, joining Damian Abraham and myself. Gabe, happy holiday season to you, and thanks for stopping by for a couple minutes to chat with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and happy holidays to you guys and everyone out there listening. And I appreciate you guys listening to this interview, too, out there.
We won't keep everything to just Evolve 38, but as we go back to March the 8th of this past year, you guys were in Deer Park, New York that night. It featured a lot of notable events. It was the first cage match you guys had ever put together. It was the return of Davey Richards. And as we had been gushing about, a phenomenal match involving Chris Hero and Drew Gulak. As we're a few months removed, Gabe, what are your recollections of Evolve 38 that stand the test of time these many months later?
Well, it's one of my favorite shows that we've done with Evolve. But it was also a very interesting show how it came together. It's very tumultuous. Basically, we had an opportunity. We had one opportunity to book Drew Galloway and Roderick Strong because of their schedules. And we wanted to get the steel cage match in. So we were just worried that it was going to take that if we didn't get it in on this date, we wouldn't be able to for a few months down the line because they were both busy with all sorts of other commitments. So we basically booked this show as a one shot, which we never do. We usually do double shots or triple shots because we could do this Drew Galloway versus Roderick Strong steel cage match on this show. So it was very fortunate, and then it turned out that we were able to get them again and prolong the feud, and the cage match was a very important chapter of it. But we thought it was a very hot feud. It was a hottest feud at the time, so we wanted to get it in. So being a single shot, what you normally do on the independent wrestling scene, or at least with us, is to kind of divide up the travel costs, because we have our crew coming up from Florida, Sal, my business partner, who handles all the production and everything. He makes everything happen. He and his crew come up from Florida, and then we have a bunch of fly-ins and everything. So we normally don't like to do just one show, because then all those travel expenses are incurred on one show. And I'm sure, Damien, you know from touring that, you know, you try to get as many shows as you can, just to kind of divide up all the expenses of everything.
Well, I try to do as little touring as possible, but yeah, I definitely know that is definitely the way the economics should work.
Yeah, so you understand that principle. So this being just a single shot, we felt we were going to have a very strong main event with Roderick Strong versus Drew Galloway in the cage. So we were going to take a little easy on the undercard. That's where we were going to try to cut some expenses in order to make this happen and justify having the show. But then that all suddenly changed because, as you see, it turned out to be a very, very deep undercard, and it actually became an overbooked show. It actually had more people on the show than I like to have on a typical Evolve show. Because after we booked our initial crew and we had the card all set and everything, suddenly Davey Richards came into play. And that was like a totally unexpected thing that just came out of nowhere. And when you have the access to book a talent like Davey Richards, you book him because he's one of the best going today. And, of course, Davey and I had a rather tumultuous past. We've had our problems in the past. And one thing I like doing is making up with people. And Davey came to me and said, hey, let me do you a favor. Let me come do this show for you in good faith to show that I'm remorseful for everything that happened in the past with us. And let me do a make good for you. So how can you turn that down? You know, when a guy's saying something like that. So suddenly Davey Richards is added to the show. So suddenly you got another main event quality match on it. And then we had just started our relationship with PJ Black, who was Justin Gabriel in WWE, and he had just been released, and he was just making his way to the indies. He was scheduled to make his debut for us on the WrestleMania weekend shows at the WWN Live Experience. That's the name of our shows on WrestleMania weekend, and we're having it again this year. You can go to morethanmania.com for all the info on that. She plug right there. But what happened was Justin Gabriel was set to debut for us at WWN Live Experience. But then it might have even been the night before the show. It was within 48 hours of the show. He contacted me and he said, hey, I want to work. I'm in the New York area. I got nothing to do that night. Can you give me a match? And it was very affordable because he was right there and everything was just all set to happen. And he was eager to work. He wanted to get in the ring and he wanted to get in an Evolve ring and get his first match in. So suddenly about 24 to 48 hours before the show, we had, DJ Black added, which gave us another main event. So the card went from being very top heavy with a strong main event, which basically was the reason we were having this one shot, to suddenly having a very, very deep undercard with Davey Richards and PJ Black both added. In addition, we already had like Chris Hero versus Drew Gulak, which I was counting on to be a huge match, and they both delivered. Gulak, one of our top guys, and Hero, absolutely, what a year he had in 2015. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about an MVP and ace. I mean, the thing I love about Chris Hero is coming up January marks 10 years that I've been working with him. On and off, you know, we had a few years where we didn't work together, obviously. But it's been 10 years that we've had a relationship and that we've been working together. And Chris Hero now is much better than he is at his best now than he was throughout any other time that we worked together. And in all rights, Hero should be a bitter man after everything that he's gone through in the wrestling business. He should be kind of maybe coasting on his name a little bit. And instead of doing any of that, he has improved every facet of his game. And it's just so awesome in the ring right now. And what a year he's had in 2015. I mean, he is a Wrestler of the Year candidate, or most outstanding Wrestler of the Year candidate, to me, and right at the top of the list of anybody in 2015. And I'm very much looking forward to moving forward with him in 2016. You know, that was a big match for us. And, then we ended up with some extra guys. Like, we had booked Team Tremendous because they were local and we thought we weren't going to have a lot on the undercard. So we kind of ended up with an extra match with them. And, same with, Martin Stone and Biff Busick. That kind of turned into an extra thing. So it ended up being a pretty deep card all said and done because of those additions and an interesting backstory on how we got there. I feel it was a lot of just, wow, you know, this kind of came out of nowhere stuff going on with that show, which happens sometimes.
Gabe, you as a booker, you've never been afraid to really self-analyze what is working, what is not working, throwing stuff out, going in with different philosophies. How would you say your philosophies have changed over the past year in regards to Evolve and putting shows together, where you mentioned you do have kind of an ideal match number and guys you want to have booked on the show? How has Evolve changed over the past year for yourself?
Well, the big emphasis now is making more out of less and making sure that everything is important and means something. We try not to have throwaway matches. I felt that something that became kind of passe or doesn't make the same impact as those matches where you have too many guys booked on a show and you end up with these four ways or these six ways that are just kind of random, and they're fun and there's cool stuff that happens in them, but you always forget about them 5 minutes after they happen. I mean, they're just like total junk food to me at this point. So we tried to move away from those, which were kind of a trademark of my booking for years, and kind of go more towards singles matches, a real big emphasis on singles matches with some tag team wrestling mixed in. We're gonna go move forward more with tag wrestling in 2016 as we have our first Evolve tag title tournament coming up, to crown our first champions, coming up January 22nd, 23rd, 24th in Florida. And I'll get into that in a little bit, but that would be another kind of evolution of Evolve going into 2016. But 2015, we were like, let's kind of scale back the number of guys we book, but make sure kind of every match means something or has some sort of importance, or at least has time to be digested by the fans and time to resonate. And let's kind of slow things down, go for more of a realistic, hard-hitting, submission-based style of wrestling. And we had the guys that could execute that. Of course, you have to go with the talent that you have, and we put together a roster with guys that were able to execute that kind of style, a lot of grappling and taking a new directions and really take a throwback style but innovate it and modernize it, and I found it compelling to watch, and usually I book what I want to see as a fan. So we kind of scaled things down. Maybe we had five or six matches per show instead of eight, but all the matches had a purpose and had a reason behind them and led to something. And, you know, back in my ROH days, I would have like 4 hour shows and just 30 guys thrown on them and this and that. And, you know, I look back at some of the lineups and I'm just like, oof, but, it's kind of like the opposite of that now. So I believe it's something you always have to do, and I go a lot by music, you know, like my favorite bands, like a band like Neurosis. I mean, that's the band that I listen to all the time, and you look at them from album to album to album, it's always a progression. And a big influence on everything was what Neurosis did. They were known for having the live visuals at their live shows. And then they took those away. They said, hey, there's screens everywhere now. And when we started doing the live visuals, nobody was really doing it like that. And now everywhere you look, there's a screen. So they kind of went back to the basics where it's just them playing. And that had a huge influence on me where I was like, you know, let's kind of go back to the basics of wrestling and take away some of the flash and go with the substance. So, the artists that I admire, always try to evolve what they do. So as a booker, you kind of have to do the same. And that's where I get those. You know, Rush is another band that's like that, which is a huge influence on me. you know, Neil Peart completely changed his drumming style going into the last album, and it's one of their best albums. And for him to do that when he could just coast, you know, after 30 years or whatever, 40 years, is really influential and inspiring, and something that I always strive to do.
I also want to ask about the streaming service. You'll be very happy to know, Gabe, that here I purchased this on WWNLive.com. Damien's got a Blu-ray copy of Evolve 38 here. Where are we at in the piracy game? Is it still a massive headache for you to be dealing with? Are people's buying habits changing in the sense that there is that desire to support wrestling such as Evolve? Where are we at now at the end of 2015 in regards to piracy and the overall success of the streaming service?
I've kind of thrown my hands up on the piracy. I mean, we do what we can with it, but I don't, you know, it is what it is at this point. It's just tough to fight. And it's a shame because it does cost us money. But what we did this year is we kind of tried to take things in a different direction. The DVD model wasn't working with us anymore or for us anymore because of the replication costs. So we were able to start Blu-rays. That's a new thing for us. We started that about 6 months ago, where we took our Blu-ray production in-house. We have everything done in-house, the editing, the replication, the artwork, everything right now. And it's lowered our cost significantly. And now we've been just coming out with one Blu-ray after another. I mean, it's something like 15 Blu-rays so far, and they're going to keep coming. And it really led us to a huge holiday season. So, our best in the last few years. So that's been a huge success. So, you know, instead of sitting here worrying about piracy, and we still do, you know, we'll still go after people if we have to. We just, I don't make it a priority anymore. But instead of doing, you know, instead of worrying about piracy so much, we went in different directions where we went with these Blu-rays, which I, you know, the quality, I'm really proud of the quality of them. Sal and Josh and Brandon down in Florida do a tremendous job with them. And we've seen they've really helped our business. And iPay-per-view at WWNLive.com, that allows the fans to watch all the shows live. And that's the main thing. I mean, 99% of our shows are live now. So that's a huge thing. So and that makes it worth it to the people. And that fights piracy, too, having that easy access to be able to watch these shows live. And we have, like, the Roku channel. So that makes it easier, and we're working on we're going to be on everything. So, you know, the other apps and everything. So that's something that's in development too. It just takes time with us. You know, we're a small operation and it's a mom and pop business, and, you know, you only have so much money. So everything takes time, but we're going to get there. So, you know, I feel that you just have to kind of move forward at this point and be progressive and see what works and what doesn't work. And one thing that wasn't working was DVDs, but there's still a demand for physical media. So we came out with the Blu-rays, and that's been a huge success so far. And people can check those out at DGUSA.tv. And I should also note that they're 40% off until January 1st. So you can get them for $12 each now, which is a great deal. It's not going to be, we're not going to offer that sale price again for a long time.
Are you seeing, at this point a new type of wrestling fan kind of come in? Like sort of the idea of the wrestling fan that would be beholden to, you know, buying the tape trading, I guess, first, and then ultimately buying DVDs. And is it now a new breed of consumer?
I think a big part is now NXT. I think NXT has breathed new life into the indies. And WWE being open-minded and progressive as far as promoting the indies. I mean, what they did for us last October with Sami Zayn and giving us mentions on WWE.com and the guys tweeting about us and everything was a tremendous shot in the arm for us. And it greatly helped the health of our company. And it was very, cutting edge thinking on their part. I can't give them enough credit for doing that. What NXT is now doing is creating new fans. Like, I went to that Brooklyn show in August, and I was just stunned walking around that, because normally you go to a WWE show, you see a lot of kids, a lot of families, and not so much the ECW crowd that I was used to in the 90s. And that NXT crowd was an ECW crowd. It was a lot of people in, like, maybe in their 20s or you know, 18 to 25 year olds. And to me, that crowd had been lost, and now NXT is bringing them back, and that's trickling down to the indies. I had a friend the other day, a guy that I've known from the ECW days, who's become a friend of mine for you know 20 years now, and he was he hasn't been to one of our shows in a while, and he hasn't had people to go with, and he messaged me the other day, and he was like, hey, when are you guys back in New York? I got like 5 friends now who are like totally into indie wrestling because of NXT. Like they all want to come to a show. So I believe that we are seeing a new generation come in, and maybe, you know, obviously the tape trading days are over, but it might be people who are watching YouTube or whatever they can online, and then they get into it, or they're watching NXT and they say, oh, you know, this guy, Apollo Crews, oh, he was Wuhan Nation and Evolve and Dragon Gate USA. You know, let me check some of that out. And it's always great to have that pipeline of talent going there because it just gives us more exposure.
As we wrap things up here, Gabe, and we will get into the shows coming up in Florida in a couple of weeks, but as we look at guys that had very big years in 2015, you mentioned Hero, Timothy Thatcher, certainly a big breakout year. As you look to 2016, who are those next levels that maybe people are not as familiar with at this point that you could see having very big years in 2016 that you hope to put that spotlight on?
Tracy Williams is right at the top of the list. He's been a guy that's been with us in 2015 and kind of in a mid-card role, but he is absolutely ready to break out. Ethan Page had a tremendous 2015 for us, and things are only going to be even bigger for him next year. Peter Casa, who just started with us and just signed with us, absolutely one of the most amazing high flyers I've ever seen, and he doesn't look like a high flyer, so that makes him unique. He's a guy to watch. Fred Yehi, another one. Tommy Enns ready to bust out. Matt Riddle. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's a lot of tremendous talent. It's a great time for talent right now too. There's a lot of great guys out there. A lot of guys with tremendous potential. And I can't possibly name them all here. So there's a lot to look forward to next year. And it's a good cycle. You know, we just lost Biff Busick and Rick Swan. They signed with NXT, which is great for them, and it moves that pipeline along, and now it opens up new spots for some of these guys now to really take, and I look forward to the growth. That's what I really like seeing the most is watching talent come in and grow and then move on and realize their dreams and become rich, and then we see the next generation come and chase their dreams and realize those dreams, and it's really the funnest part of the job for me.
And I want to give you the floor here for the next 3 shows that we have coming up, January 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. You'll be in Florida over the course of that weekend, crowning your first tag champions. And let all the listeners know, if they're going to be in Florida, that is, of course, Royal Rumble weekend. Lots of wrestling if you're in the state coming up in just a few weeks.
Yep, and we are piggybacking off of the Royal Rumble, you can say that. We're in Orlando. Our building is within walking distance of where the Royal Rumble is. We are running, Friday night we're in Ybor City, which is I love going to Ybor City at the Orpheum. It's kind of a home base for the WWN family. It's a great stretch. There's lots of clubs, bars, food, cigars. It's just a great place to go hang out for a day. And that's the Friday show. Then Saturday we're in Orlando. That's Saturday night. So if you're in town for the Royal Rumble and you're looking to catch a wrestling show on Saturday night, we will be there right down the street from where the Royal Rumble is. And then Sunday afternoon, right before the Royal Rumble, we will be running our finals of the tag team tournament. The tournament will be taking place over all 3 days. And we actually have 2 other tournaments going on that weekend. So we have a singles tournament going on, a style battle round robin. And we're going to take the guys who are eliminated from the tag tournament and put them in kind of a second chance tournament. So it's going to be a big emphasis on tag team wrestling that weekend. And, that show on the Sunday before the Royal Rumble will be over in time for you to go get dinner and then make it a doubleheader with the Royal Rumble. You can go to dgusa.tv for all the info. Again, that's dgusa.tv. And if you can't be there in person, of course, all 3 shows will be on live via pay-per-view at wwnlive.com. And it's going to be a real exciting weekend. We really kind of like didn't hold back on the budget on this one. We went way over budget on the talent. So we have a tremendous amount of talent coming in that weekend from all over the world. Zack Sabre Jr. and Timothy Thatcher as a super team. Tommy Enns and Chris Hero as a super team. Team Tremendous is coming in. The premier athlete brand, Anthony East and Caleb Conley. So Drew Gulak and TJ Perkins. And the dream team, Johnny Gargano and Drew Galloway. Of course, our Rapunzel Vice of, Trent Beretta and Rocky Romero, one of the best tag teams in the world, a very well-known tag team. So it's going to be an absolutely unbelievable tournament. And I'm really looking forward to kind of changing the pace up a little bit and putting the emphasis on tag team wrestling. So that's January 22nd through 24th, Tampa and Orlando, DGUSA.tv for all the info. And then, of course, WrestleMania weekend, I'll get a quick plug there, morethanmania.com. And we got big things with Terry Funk that weekend for all you Terry Funk fans out there. So that's morethanmania.com for WrestleMania weekend.
All right, so you can go WWNLive.com, morethanmania.com of all 53, 54, and 55 coming up January 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And my final question, Gabe, is what is the state of that steel cage we saw at Evolve 38? Does it exist? And will we see the return of that cage ever?
No, that was kind of a disaster. So it took way too long to set up, and that did not go well. So it was a night of ups with all those talent being added and it becoming, the show that it did, one of my favorite shows. It's live. Get a little trying before the cage match, but I will give the fans in Long Island all the credit in the world because they stuck with it and they got into that cage match. And Roderick Strong and Drew Galloway, that was a tough spot to be in, having to come in after that long delay, and they didn't let it phase them. They're total pros, and they put on a really must-see match there. So credit to everybody out there, and I appreciate you guys having me on. I appreciate all of you people out there listening.
All right. Well, you have a great new year, Gabe. All the best at the upcoming shows, and I'm sure we'll see you down in Dallas over WrestleMania weekend. Look forward to it.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you to Gabe Sapolsky for joining us. And now we welcome back Wei Ting and Damian, who both pretty much disappeared over the last 25 minutes while I chatted
there
with Gabe. You were there.
I was watching,
physically.
I was watching the Maestro at work. I wasn't going to interrupt with my dumb opinion.
I wanted to hear your questions.
I was watching one of the most respected journalists in pro wrestling and MMA.
Wei left.
Well, Wei was here in spirit form, too. Well, that was my one question, was Wei.
I was just hoping to hear Gabe interview Gabe at some point in the interview.
I nearly brought the impression.
We're done, guys. A week after we did a four-hour show.
I'm sure he would find
this
it.
Show has been too damn long, guys. We are pushing an insane amount of time, as per usual, when Damian stops by.
My back is so sore from sitting in this chair trying to see both of you.
Oh, I thought you were going to make a carrying us joke.
Oh, God,
it's
no.
The easy go-to.
No. Thank you for having me back and ruining my week of podcast listening.
Is this your one appearance on our show a year?
No, I'll be back whenever you guys will have me. It's just hard to get, sometimes I'll text you in the morning looking to hang out, and I just don't get anything back.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
because I save all the messages you send, and hanging out has never been one of them.
Okay, guys.
Well, I called you at 9 a.m. on last week because I was going to the Vice office.
Wow, I really have to dig back to see the last time you sent me a message. Let's see.
Yeah, this show needs to be a little longer while you guys look at your phones, at your chat histories. This is very compelling radio.
All right. Next week, what are we reviewing, Wei?
Well, since it is the new year, and also the day before the new SmackDown debut on USA, we decided to go back to, I guess, a well-remembered time in SmackDown's history. And this is will be the first episode of SmackDown from 2003.
Yes, we are reviewing the January 2nd, 2003 edition of SmackDown to kick off the new year. 13 years ago, this was when Paul Heyman was booking SmackDown, and this particular episode of SmackDown features the wedding of Dawn Marie and Al Wilson. Will you be listening? Does that grab you, Damian?
Oh, if you guys were reviewing Dirt, I would listen. I find you guys compelling.
I would listen to that. Are you kidding me? I'd love to listen to
Dirt, the Motley Crue book. The Dirt.
Oh.
I thought you meant physical dirt.
Yeah,
physical
that's what dirt, I meant. But I'm saying, I'm trying to, I don't know why I went to Dirt. I should have thought
about
that.
Podcast about Dirt.
Be fascinating. Be groundbreaking.
It's a podcast about nothing.
Well, this podcast has been about lots.
Lots.
Do you want to have the final word? Is there anything you want to alert our listeners to? You've invested so much of your time. I want you to have something to get out of this.
If you want to hear more of me, check out Turned Out a Punk. God knows why you'd want to do that. I promise more wrestling-related content in 2016, working on some cool podcasts in that world.
Who are some guests you got coming up?
I'm looking, no spoilers. Unless they happen, I don't want
to. Well, how about some past guests that they might want to jump on and listen to? Anthony Bourdain has been on.
Yep.
Scott Kelly, our pal.
Yep, Scott Kelly. We talk a little bit of wrestling there. Nikki from the band Nothing, Nikki Money, we talk about wrestling a lot on that one. He's a big fan. He used to go to ECW shows back in the day in Philadelphia. Tony Erba, that guy is the king of Cleveland wrestling and not actually a wrestler, mind you. I guess The Miz is actually the king, but he knows more about wrestling than anyone else in music, that's for sure. Fred Armisen, Scott Thompson, Meredith Graves from Perfect Pussy, a weird mix of people.
So there, go check it out.
And on Twitter, at Left 4 Damien.
Left 4 Damien on Twitter. Turned Out a Punk on iTunes. Is that the easiest place to find it?
Probably. Well, DamienAbraham.com, too.
DamienAbraham.com. Yeah. Wow. That takes some ego to register that one.
Oh, I'm sorry, John. We can't all have live audio wrestling as our personal playground to disseminate our views.
Have you recorded any more podcasts over the last 9 to 12 months that we can expect anytime soon?
No one else has had me on. But I'm telling you, now that everyone has heard me host Jericho interviewing Jericho, what about Austin, Jim Ross?
You're offering your services.
I'm out here, guys.
You're available.
Hit me up.
Okay, well, there you go. At Left 4 Damien for all podcast inquiries. Next week, January 2nd, 2003 edition of SmackDown. It is up on the WWE Network, so very easy to watch. And we promise next week's review will be a fraction of the prior two, because we have done, I think, 7-plus hours over the course of 2 Review Away episodes. There's been a lot of talking away.
Oh, it's like a WrestleMania weekend.
I should be in bed. I'm not even supposed to be at work today.
All right, taking us out. It was referenced by Damien. They were also referenced by Gabe Sapolsky. We need a Neurosis song to take us out, Damien. What is appropriate to cap off this review of Evolve 38, starring the steel cage that Gabe says will never be used again?
My favorite Neurosis songs are all off the record that no one really likes. So why don't we do...
This is your review. You get your exit music. Don't worry about people listening.
Keep in mind, this is a lot of people's first sampling.
But that's the thing. It's like, I don't want to screw it up by going to like some super early old song.
Some people might enjoy it.
Okay, well, how about Progress? To bring it full circle to wrestling. This is a song that they wrote about a
Progress
British
Wrestling
Federation that would come into existence nearly 30 years after they wrote the song.
Good night, everybody. Waiting has to go to sleep.